Testing 1, 2, Wendy.
Yes, we're good to go.
Matt, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you, Mayor.
Can you hear me now, sir?
Very good. Actually, the entirely operator error on my end is I had my speakers off, which had nothing to do with anybody but me. So let's check. Wendy, are we live? AGP, are we live?
We are live.
Very good. Thank you very much. And then I will, at 6 o'clock on Monday, June 22nd, bring this meeting of the City Grover Beach City Council to order. I will just in a moment, I just do want to make reference to the fact that I am wearing a mask. So there is an update as part of our agenda this evening, as part of our consent agenda, is that the governor has imposed a mask ordinance or a mask regulations. However, and it is for all public facilities. However, the one I'm currently in is not currently open to the public. So with your permission, I am going to take off my mask and acknowledge the mask ordinance for the state, but proceed with the meeting sans mask. So, and I will call to order this meeting, and in compliance with state and county shelter at home orders, meetings will be held by teleconference only until further notice. This meeting can be viewed on channel 20 and is available on live streaming on the city's website and on www.slow-span.org. And members of the public may provide public comment during the meeting by calling area code 805-321-6639, and the phone lines are currently open. So if you would, please join me in a moment of silence and a moment of positive reflection for those men and women who are protecting our country, in the armed forces, as well as our emergency service providers, locally police, fire, and ambulance services. So if you would, please, moment of silence. Very good. Thank you, everyone, for that moment of silence and moment of reflection. So now I would like to call on our police chief, Chief Peters, if you would lead us in a flag salute. And as in other Zoom calls, if everyone would stay muted, the chief can lead the flag salute and we can all follow along. Thank you, Chief.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, members of the council. Place your right hand over your heart and repeat after me. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Very good. Thank you for that, Chief. I appreciate that, and thank you for all the services that you guys have, and you and your staff have been providing over the course of the last several weeks on behalf of the City of Grover Beach. So with that, I will do a roll call. Madam Clerk, please.
Councilmember Lance.
Here.
Councilmember Nichols, I'm not sure is on the line yet. Councilmember Shaw.
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem Bright.
Here.
Mayor Lee.
I am here as well, so we will continue, and please let us know when Councilmember Nichols is able to join us either on the phone line or in video format. So with that, we don't have any closed session announcements, but I do want to let the council know and other members of the public that our city attorney, Mr. Hale, is actually on site today. And so he is joining us in person via video from City Hall. So with that, I'll go to our agenda review and see if there's any members of the council that want to make any revisions to the agenda, or I'll take a motion to proceed as published.
Well, hearing no other comments regarding the agenda, I will make a motion that we accept it as presented.
I'll second.
So we have a motion and a second. All those in favor say aye. Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Very good. We will proceed with the agenda as presented. And So next, that will take us to our ceremonial calendar, where we do have this evening one ceremonial item, which is a proclamation in recognition of Pride Month. And I will see if I can bring it up on my screen.
Bill. All right.
And it sounds like we have Councilmember Nichols joining us.
Yes.
Very good. And then, so Barbara, when not speaking, if you would go ahead and mute your phone line, because we are getting some feedback.
All right.
Very good. Great. Then that does take us to our ceremonial calendar, where so we do have a proclamation of the City Council of the City of Grover Beach declaring June 2020 Lesbian, Gay, Bisexual, Transgender, and Queer Pride Month. So whereas the City of Grover Beach is honored to recognize Pride Month and celebrate members of the lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and queer community who live and work here. So whereas the city aligns with countywide and statewide initiatives and policies that advance the LGBTQ plus community's journey toward equality and strives to create a safe, inclusive society in which all community members are treated fairly, with dignity, and respect in all settings. Whereas last year marked the first year of having a Pride celebration in the South County to celebrate the achievements of the LGBTQ plus community in our area, with the next event planned in 2021, given the COVID-19 pandemic this year. Whereas the City of Grover Beach takes pride in the fact that we are a vibrant, diverse community and proudly joins other communities in striving to build a stronger, better state and nation for all of our residents. And whereas, as June 2020 marks the 51st anniversary of the Stonewall Uprising in New York City, the City of Grover Beach is dedicated to continuing efforts to ensure equality and respect for all. And therefore, be it resolved that the City Council of the Grover Beach does hereby designate June 2020 as Lesbian, Gay, Bisexual, Transgender, and Queer Pride Month. Very good. And let's see, do we have anybody on the phone to accept the proclamation? I think I'm seeing that Erica Andrade is on the phone. Erica, are you available?
Hi, this is Denise Andrade. I'm actually the director of Five Cities Hope. And we want to thank the City Council on behalf of our entire organization for the continued support that you have offered us. And we're very happy to see this proclamation today at this meeting. So thank you.
Very good. Thank you for those comments, Denise. Appreciate that. Is there any members of the council that want to make any comments on this item? We'll start, Councilmember Shaw.
I just, wanted to say congratulations, and I really enjoyed attending your event last year, as a lot of us did for Gay Pride Month. And I was wondering if you're going to have an event this year, or if you did and we missed it. I thought you were maybe going to have a drive-through event.
Denise, are you still on the line?
Yeah, I'm still on the line.
Okay, great. So did you hear Councilmember Shaw's question?
I did not, actually. I think it might have cut out a little bit.
Councilmember Shaw, could you repeat your question for us?
Sure, sorry. I just want to say I enjoyed your event last year, and I was wondering if you were planning to have another event this year. I thought I saw something about a drive-through event, but I wasn't sure if maybe I missed it.
So Five Cities Hope isn't planning on it. I know that other local organizations have actually are having a virtual pride, including one that is beginning tonight, I believe in the next 20 minutes from Santa Maria. But we were hoping, if everything goes according to plan with the shelter in place and all of the other COVID-19 stuff going on, hopefully by the end of the year we might be able to have some sort of event some sort of placeholder for Pride, just so we can do something to still celebrate this year.
Thank you. Looking forward to it. Hopefully it can happen.
Very good. Councilmember Lance, any questions or comments?
No questions or comments.
Very good. Councilmember Nichols, anything you wanted to add?
Just congratulations. I'm glad we did this.
Very good. And Mayor Pro Tem Bright.
No, I'll just echo those same sentiments. Thank you very much.
Very good. Thank you, everyone, for the sentiments. And I'll just add one last comment in the fact that, as the proclamation says, we are a diverse and vibrant community, and we are proud of our law enforcement. We are also proud of our diversity in this community as well. And so I'm happy to know in this community that the two conversations are not the only positions that we have. We can actually have conversations with each other. I've had fabulous conversations with both Denise and other members of Five Cities Hope on any number of topics, and I've had the same conversations with our police chief as well. So in conclusion of this item, though, I would like to say we did receive a flag today from Five Cities Hope, and with the council's direction, we would look forward to having this fly at either City Hall or Ramona Garden Park for the remainder of June, which is Pride Month. So with that, unless there's any other comments, we'll go ahead and close that item and bring it back. I'm not seeing any presentations this evening, but that will take us to public communications. And so under public communications, we would ask that people call in at 805-321-6639 if you would like to provide any public comments. So I'll turn it over to our city clerk and see if there's anyone on the line with public comments.
We do not have anybody under general public comments.
No. Okay, very good. Thank you for that. So that'll take us into our consent agenda, where we do have a number of items on the consent agenda this evening. And I will turn it over to members of the council to see if there's anyone has questions or comments on the consent agenda. And as with other items, if you do have public comment on the consent agenda, please call in at 805-321-6639, and we can take questions or comments on that. So first we'll go to the council to see if there's questions on consent. Council Member Shaw, any questions?
No questions, thank you.
Very good. Council Member Lance?
No questions at this time, thank you.
Very good. Council Member Nichols?
No questions.
Okay. And Mayor Pro Tem Bright?
No questions, thank you.
Very good. So with that, I won't pull it for separate action, but I did just want to let the council know that item number 5, which is the Five Cities Fire Authority, the Joint Powers Authority agreements, the Five Cities Fire Authority did recommend that the cities and jurisdictions approve. They had a good discussion about the Third Amendment and did recommend that cities and the CSD approve that. So if there's any specific questions on that, I'll entertain those. I'll turn it over to our city clerk and see if there's anyone on the line for consent agenda public comments.
No, there are not.
Very good. Thank you for that. Then I will bring it back to the council for consideration. So who would like to make a motion? And actually, as we're waiting for someone to make a motion, I did have a conversation with our city manager earlier today and did make some very minor updates, grammatical, non-substantive changes to, which item was that, Mr. City Manager? I believe it was the local hazard mitigation plan. And I think a minor comment on the minutes of the city council for Monday, June 1st. But I think those have all been corrected and or replied to. So who would like to make a motion?
I'll make a motion.
I move
Go ahead, Barbara.
Okay, thank you. I move that we adopt the resolution approving the Third Amendment to the Five Cities Fire Authority Joint Exercise of Powers Agreement.
I'll second that.
Okay, and I appreciate that motion, Barbara, and second by Councilmember Shaw. Does anyone else want to make a motion to adopt the remainder of the consent agenda?
Okay, then I'll make the motion that we adopt the remaining items 2, 3, 4, 6, 7, and 8 of the consent agenda.
I'll second that one as well.
Very good. So it sounds like we have two actions, Madam Clerk. I'll turn to our city attorney and see if we, even though we have two motions, it's all for the consent agenda. Do we need to take two roll calls?
let me get this. So there we go. Technically, you can't have two motions on the floor at the same time. So I would take the first motion that you had that was seconded and then pick up the second one.
Very good. I appreciate that. So, Madam City Clerk, we will take the first motion, which was for approval of item number 5, the Five Cities okay. Fire Authority Amendment number 3. Roll call, please.
Mr. Mayor?
Yes, Mr. City Manager. I apologize.
I'm sorry to interject. I won't call this a point of order, but just to call to your attention that we did get some correspondence regarding item number 8 that is listed as supplemental information posted on the website. This is in regards to the COVID-19 response update. There are a number of emails, I think 4 emails, Madam City Clerk, that came in under the banner of Race Matters SLO County. They were listed as item number 8, again, the COVID-19 response update. The council could consider this communication now, or the council could elect to discuss this at a later time during the agenda, given the council's prerogatives. I wanted to call this to your attention. Sorry for not calling this out when the consent item agenda first began, but I want to make sure the council was aware of this.
Gotcha. I apologize, and you had said that we had some public communications on that, so I forgot to write that down. So let's first take the motion on the floor, which is the Five Cities Fire Authority. So we'll roll call, and then we'll come back to that item. Thank you, Mr. City Manager. Roll call, please, Madam City Clerk, on the item number 5.
Councilmember Nichols.
Yes.
Councilmember Shaw.
Yes.
Councilmember Lance.
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Bright.
Yes.
And Mayor Lee.
Yes. Okay, very good. Thank you for that. So now we'll turn to Mayor Pro Tem Bright and see if, since she was the maker of the motion for the balance of the consent agenda, if we wanted to pull item number 8 for separate consideration, or if the response from the city manager regarding the four emails was adequate at this time, and then we can discuss it later under council communications. Do you have a preference?
I don't have a preference. I will defer to my colleagues, however we wish to handle that. I have a question, if I might. I don't know if this is out of order here, but I didn't see any email. Did they not come to the council as a whole, or were they on the website? Or
I can speak to that, Mayor Pro Tem Bright. They came late in the afternoon today. They were all regarding item number 8, and so we did post them to the website under supplemental information to be able to call them out at this time. And if the council wished, we could also read them into the record, but we wanted to make sure they were available for the conversation and for the public record at this time.
Thank you.
Could I ask a question then, just to follow up? I'm getting a little maybe confused because I thought I heard they were from Race Matters SLO, but then I heard they were on COVID. I'm just wondering, is it something different than we've seen before? I don't know if you'd be able to give us a little summary.
Through the mayor.
City Manager, why don't we do this? How about if we take the balance of the consent agenda and then we'll pull item number 8 for separate consideration directly thereafter?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Okay.
So let's go ahead and we'll finish up the consent agenda and then have discussion on item number 8. So we'll go back to Mayor Pro Tem Bright, who I believe was the maker of our consent agenda motion.
Okay. So are you asking me now then to make a motion to pull item 8?
Actually, I think we've already going to pull item 8 for separate discussion. So this would be a motion on the balance of the consent agenda, realizing we've already approved item 5.
Very good. So then I'll make a motion that we accept the balance of the consent agenda. Yes?
Second.
Very good. So we have a motion by Mayor Pro Tem Bright, second by Councilmember Nichols. Any other discussion? And I'm seeing that this does need to be a roll call vote. So, Madam City Clerk, roll call, please.
Mayor Pro Tem Bright?
Yes.
Councilmember Nichols?
Yes.
Councilmember Lance?
Yes.
Councilmember Shaw?
Yes.
Mayor Lee?
Yes. Very good. Okay, so we have that takes us to item number 8, which is the COVID-19 response update. And City Manager Bronson, thank you for the reminder about the email correspondence. And it sounds like, and I apologize, I forget who brought it up, would like to have a summary of what the emails are, if they're all consistent or if we need to read them individually.
So to the mayor's point, we did receive, I believe it's 6 emails this afternoon. They were all regarding the topic of Race Matters Slo County, which is an organization that sent a list of what they call demands to each city and to the county regarding police issues, law enforcement, use of force, diversity and inclusion questions, and 2 of the letters referenced item number 8 on the agenda, so the COVID-19 response, hence why we as staff put them in one batch and listed them as supplemental information under item number 8, though the council could have the prerogative of discussing these letters either during this item under the consent calendar or under public communication or under council communications later in the evening. That's the council's prerogative of how you wish to discuss these letters further. I would say they're similar. Each one is a little different in some of the terminology. So we could read the letters into the record if that was the direction of the council, just to put it out for the record. And the council could discuss this now or could discuss this again at a later moment in the meeting, at your prerogative. And you're on mute, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you for that. And so what's the pleasure of the council with respect to this item? And perhaps actually before we go there, City Manager, and perhaps either you or the police chief could respond and give us a quick question response with regards to what the city did release on Friday with regards to the Race Matters Slo letter in totality.
Sure. Why don't I can do that, and then the chief can answer any questions if they arise. So Race Matters Slo County, like I've said, is a nonprofit organization and sent a list of again, what they call demands to each city and to the county of San Luis Obispo in the wake of the action against George Floyd and regarding police brutality practices and injustices around the country. So the series of demands, about 10 to 12 different demands, including declaring racism as a public health emergency and instituting body cam videos at all times, establishing a civilian review board for police departments, and a number of other demands. They asked for an initial response by Friday, June 19th. We did abide by that and sent a response on Friday. Our response acknowledges the work of the organization in advocating for racial justice in our community. Our response also indicated that we are reviewing the information. There's a very detailed list of demands that they were providing to us. We're reviewing it to determine its applicability to Grover Beach and where we're already meeting the items and areas for continual improvement. We indicated that we will provide further correspondence to Race Matters once this review is complete. Furthermore, I'll add that the city had previously expressed our shock and disgust at the action against Mr. Floyd and understand the pain felt by community members and throughout the country regarding injustices across our land. We also indicated that our police department has a long history of lawful, judicious, and reasonable use of force practices, as illustrated in the response to the 8 can't wait issues that we released last week that identified how our policies reflect these use of force practices and standards. We also acknowledge in our response that the council in 2017 adopted a Declaration of Human Rights that affirmed that everybody in the community is entitled to all rights and freedoms without discrimination or distinction of any kind. And that's a statement the council had made at that time, which is a very definitive statement around human rights as a community. So those are items that we included in our response. And again, we will send further correspondence to Race Matters SLO once we complete our review of the list of demands that have been issued. I'd be glad to answer further questions if the council wishes.
Very good. I appreciate those comments. Let's see if the council has any questions. We'll start with Councilmember Shaw.
I don't have any questions at this time, though.
Okay. Very good. Councilmember Lance.
No questions, just a comment on maybe how to move forward with the supplementary items.
Okay. And I think we can be at that point as well. So if you have comments, feel free to share now. Councilmember Lance, go ahead and share those comments. Her screen has frozen, so actually I'll go over to Councilmember Nichols and see if she has any comments or questions.
the only comment I have is that things are getting rather in and out and upside down here, and it's hard to follow.
Okay, very good. So, Mayor Pro Tem Bright, did you have any questions or comments?
I have no questions. I read the letter that was sent, and I thought it was excellent. Covered, I think, everything that needed to be covered. So, I was quite satisfied with the letter that was sent. Thank you.
Very good. And Councilmember Shaw, I neglected to give you an opportunity for comments. It looks like Councilmember Lance has dropped off for just a moment from a video standpoint, so I'll let you make any comments and see if she comes back in a moment.
Yeah, in the time that we've kind of been talking, I did go and read the letters. It seemed that, and I had read through Race Matters SLO, some of their list of demands or things that they wanted to see. And the letters just seem to ask, in addition to what we've already done, that we declare a public health crisis, racism as a public health crisis, reallocate some police funds toward mental health or something else, and then also just work with diversity groups. And I'm not sure if we want to do it here or if we want to do it in later on, but I've discussed with the city manager a couple times, you know, I don't want to let the very difficult couple weeks that everyone has gone through with this, ourselves, law enforcement, you know, people of color, I don't want to let this fade away and not take action, but I also don't want to take a knee-jerk reaction, if that makes sense. I, you know, for example, we had to declare homelessness an emergency crisis 2 years ago to get a grant, but it sure doesn't mean we've really done much to cure homelessness. So until someone can explain to me why we would declare that, I don't want to waste people's time. If it means we could be open to grants or whatever, I mean, I think if it's just a way for us to make it seem like we take this seriously, as a city manager states, we've been taking this seriously since 2017. And, you know, as far as reallocating funds, we've had this discussion many times that actually our police force is underfunded to do the community boots on the ground work that they would love to do and we would love to have them do. And that could include working with homeless individuals or being out walking or on bikes. So I do want to have a greater conversation. and I do want to agendize it, which was why I was going to wait till public comment. But the city manager and I were talking about, you know, maybe it's even better to not agendize it sooner, maybe wait a few weeks, because I know from the national politics on down, things are happening, and I want to kind of, for example, I know the mayor's group was talking about perhaps taking some stands, and some of the other cities were having some ideas, and I've actually been looking on the website for the National League of Cities, and they have a lot of good suggestions. And I reached out today to the head of the California League of Cities, Carolyn Coleman, to say, can you find us some things that work in smaller communities, just having to do with race and diversity? And because to me, you know, I have full confidence in everything I've seen from our law enforcement and our police department. But my goodness, has the can of worms opened up to show the racial issues that are still very prevalent in this country and in this community. So I want to have a greater discussion, but I don't know that declaring a public health crisis or in walking away, I don't think I'd feel right about that. So I guess those are my comments for now, but I do have a lot of ideas that I think would require agendizing.
Okay, very good. Appreciate that. So, Councilmember Lance, I want to give you an opportunity to make some comments as well.
Yeah, apologies. I have some spotty internet connection. Yes, I agree with Councilmember Shaw. I think we should agendize this at a later date so that we can have a more substantive conversation about things that we can do that will actually make a change on a tangible level.
Very good, and I'm supportive of that as well. So and so that we don't have to wait until the council communications at the end of the agenda, it sounds like have a consensus to agendize. I saw Mayor Pro Tem Bright acknowledging seemed to be support for that as well. And so, Councilmember Nichols, after this discussion, any additional comments that you wanted to provide, or are you in concurrence with agendizing this at a future date?
I concur.
Okay. Very good. So, okay, great. I appreciate that. So, I just wanted to see if the city manager needed any other direction from us, or if there was anything that the police chief wanted to add to this discussion.
Maybe just Mr. Mayor, in terms of agendizing, just the general parameters around the discussion on which to agendize. I heard regarding the race matters demands. I heard regarding ideas for diversity and inclusion work. I heard talking about more community policing activities and what those could mean. Are those the general sentiments that I'm hearing from the council, just to make sure I'm tracking on the direction from the council? And secondly, the time frame for bringing this back. Our July meetings are right now pretty impacted, so we have to move some things around and delay some other items. If the council desire was to bring this back in the month of July, or we could look at this as an August or September time frame, if that was the council's objective.
Let me throw out an idea, just because I realize that whatever we do as a council could have the potential to bring funding into this conversation. And as Councilmember Shaw said, there's a lot of things happening either at the state level or at the national level. And realizing that in lieu of a May revise for the state's budget this year, so there's going to be a September revise. And so perhaps that's the first inclination of when we could bring something back, and to kind of see how from a budgetary standpoint, it would agenda items or the council, excuse me, bear with me, as the city's budget is proceeding, and then that'll also give us an opportunity to see how the national and the local level conversations proceed. For instance, we passed a mask ordinance about 2 weeks before the state did. And so if we do something that's premature, then perhaps we miss part of the opportunity discussion there. So any comments, Councilmember Shaw, on that approach?
No, I think that approach is a good one. I actually had talked with our city manager today about possibly September. I think, you know, for the reasons you stated, just because of possible budget constraints or hopefully budget abilities. And also, I think our communities all need to heal a little bit right now and reflect. And I think we all need to have maybe a little bit of time to figure out really constructively where to go. And I think that could be helpful too.
Very good. So any members of the council that have any additional comments you want to provide in that approach?
I agree with that wholeheartedly. I think it's a wonderful idea.
Very good. Councilmember Lance, any additional comments? Councilmember or Mayor Pro Tem Bright, any additional comments? Okay, very good. Then
thank you.
Okay, great. And then Chief Peters, just haven't had a chance to hear from you on this subject and see if you wanted to weigh in or provide any feedback to the council.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Mayor, members of the council. I will just give a couple of brief comments. What we saw in Minneapolis was deplorable and disgusting and is a violation of the law and that man's that rights. And so those officers will be prosecuted to the full extent of the law. I can tell you is that California Police Chiefs Association, as well as many other associations, are already working with our legislators at the state level to make substantial changes to the profession. Some of these changes are going to be very good for the profession going forward. We are also taking a lot of information from the federal government and federal authorities, as well as other states across the nation that are making substantial changes. So I think we will have more of that information in our hands probably September and even going into the federal new year, fiscal year in October. And so I think the timeline to discuss would probably be more appropriate in September, because we may have some more information to bring forward to you.
Very good. I appreciate that. So City Manager, does that provide enough direction and commentary for September-ish discussion?
Yes, sir. And we can meet that time frame and be able to scope out a really important community discussion that the council can convene.
Very good. So appreciate that. So unless there's other comments on that item, we will go ahead and that is a receive and file, so we don't need to do anything on that. Correct, City Manager? Am I seeing that correctly? So, and we've already approved that agenda item, we haven't approved it, but we don't have a recommended action. It's just a receive and file. So we'll close that item, and that takes us to our public hearings this evening. And just in case anyone wants to comment on a public hearing, we would ask that you call in and state your name, but call in at 805-321-6639, and our assistant or deputy city clerk will take your name and get you into the queue. But this is item number 9, an introduction and first reading of an ordinance to amend the municipal code, article 9. And so I'll turn it over to our city manager for introductions.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, council members, and I will simply turn it over to senior planner Rafael Castillo, who will be giving you the presentation tonight on our amended ADU ordinance. Mr. Castillo.
Thank you, Mr. Bronson, and thank you, Mayor, and good evening, City Council members. So this evening, I'm bringing forward, or our department is bringing forward, a ADU ordinance that is revising our existing ADU ordinance. So I just want to make sure, can everyone see my screen?
Yes.
Affirmative? Okay, thank you.
Yes, we can. Thank you.
All right, perfect. All right. So, as mentioned earlier, this is an ADU ordinance amendment to both the ordinance and the accessory structure within our development code. So, again, we are looking at amending our ADUs as well as accessory structures, and also introducing a new section to our code, which is to allow for the inclusion of tiny homes, and then also just a rather brief amendment to our current existing short-term rental ordinance. So the question is, what is an ADU? They can go by many names: granny units, granny flats. They used to be known as secondary residential units, but really they are just a smaller standalone unit. They can be converted portions of a home. They can be converted garages, or they can be detached. So the state really has established state laws requiring size and other items. And they've been doing this since 2002, but in recent years, they've really ratcheted the amount of regulations and sort of going into this one-size-fits-all model. Secondly, there's this new accessory dwelling unit known as a JADU. It's actually what's known as efficiency unit. This one can only be located within a single-family home. So what that means is if you're going to partition a portion of your existing home or your garage, it can be up to 500 square feet in size. There's two fundamental differences. The first one is the JADU can either have its own dedicated bathroom or can actually share a bath with the existing residence. And the second one is that either the primary unit or the JADU must be owner-occupied. So it's a big differential between an ADU and a JADU. So why are these really very important? Well, they're important because RHNA, or the Regional Housing Needs Assessment, is mandated by state housing law. And these ADUs are really key for us as a city of Grover Beach to hit our targeted goals for very low and low-income units. So from the reporting year of 2019 to 2028, we are required to hit a targeted goal of 148 very low and low-income units. With the construction of ADUs, we are currently projecting out that 90 of these units will qualify as low income. So again, a significant portion of our affordable housing will come from newly constructed ADUs and junior ADUs. So getting into the legislature change, in 2017, as mentioned earlier, the state has really began tinkering with ADUs, and they preempted a lot of our local control. And you'll see that throughout our ordinances, a lot of this is completed to be consistent with state law. So currently, our city ordinance cannot be enforced. We've been piecemealing our ADU ordinance over the last 3 years, and really this ordinance before you this evening comes into consistency with state law, so makes things even with the state of California. So the proposed ADU ordinance would do all that, and then there are a couple things that we're going to get into tonight to which you do have some sort of ability to change and be more flexible. So per state law, we have to allow for junior ADUs within the city of Grover Beach. We do need to reduce our parking standards and the location of parking. The state has already dictated rear and side setbacks. Those are going to be reduced down to 4 feet for ADUs only. We are required to increase what's considered by right height to 16 feet. So what that means is we, through building permits or development permit, we must allow for ADUs of 16 feet in height. Currently, state law requires that we eliminate the owner occupation requirement for a primary unit, as well as eliminate the development impact fees for units under 750 square feet, which you already are doing. And then also include requirements for lot coverage, landscaping, private open space, floor area ratios, all those items that you typically see with standard development in single-family homes, multifamily developments. Those go away in the ADU ordinance. Again, as required by law, by state law, these are state requirements and we have no local control over. So there are a few items that we do have local control over. Let's first talk about standards that we can modify. Those includes the maximum amount of size. We can also further reduce parking requirements. And we also have the ability to reduce the minimum size requirements for ADUs. So we're going to get into these in the next few slides. The first one is the minimum unit size. So the minimum unit size of an ADU per CBC or the California Building Code is 220 square feet. In Grover Beach, there are many small residences. Most of our lots are between 55 and 6,500 square feet. So we are proposing, again, to add that flexibility to existing homeowners. And again, this whole idea and concept of affordable by design, in order for us to hit that RENA number, we are proposing to reduce the minimum size to 150 square feet. This is the same square footage size of the city of San Luis, which recently amended their ADU ordinance in February, going after, as well as some other municipalities throughout the state. So again, just really trying to be flexible. It's not saying that you have to construct 150 square feet, but it is allowing that extra flexibility for residents that don't have much space or want to convert existing accessory structures. The second portion of the ordinance that we have flexibility is increasing the size of ADUs. So the state requires that all detached ADUs can be up to 1,000 square feet. They also have two separate requirements for attached ADUs. Any one bedrooms or less, they need to be either 150 square feet or 50% the size of the existing dwelling unit. If it's two bedrooms or more, it could be 50% the size of the existing dwelling unit or 1,000 square feet, whichever is less. The council can direct staff to revise the ordinance to allow all ADUs, whether attached or detached, up to 1,200 square feet. In our ordinance in Section D, it currently shows at 1,200 square feet, which differentiates from your staff report. But again, this is an item that the council has complete flexibility on, as long as we meet those state standards that are on your screen. Parking is the last one in which the ADU ordinance can be a little flexible. So currently, state law requires no parking if the following is met. The first one is if it is a half mile from a transit stop. In 2017, the state really didn't define what a transit stop is, but in 2019, they finally decided to define a transit stop, and transit stops move constantly, and that's just a fixed bus route service or light rail or subway service. Also, we cannot require parking if it's part of an existing residence conversion. So what you see a lot is folks converting that extra garage space that they have and want to turn that into residence. If someone does that, then they are required or not required to provide parking. Within one block of a car share facility, we don't have those in Grover, but in larger cities, those do exist. And then finally, on-street parking permits where they're required. Again, that is not a scenario that we have in Grover Beach, but the first two, the half-mile transit stop, as well as converting existing spaces, we are not required to have parking. So staff did an analysis of this. What you see on your screen are the red dots. Those indicate existing transit stops within the city or just outside the city. The blue circles are the walking distance of a half mile. And then there's a yellow circle on your screen. And see if I can point that up. There's a yellow circle here. That is just sort of North Grover, near Grover Heights Elementary. That's the only area in town which wouldn't meet the half-mile stop. So, again, trying to look at it from an equitable standpoint, 90% of all residences are within a half-mile transit stop. There are approximately 160 lots outside of this distance. We are recommending that the city council eliminate parking requirement for ADUs and to have a uniform standard throughout the city. And again, the biggest reason is transit stops move based on development, based on location, and it's really out of our hands in terms of how RTA, they do work with us. However, RTA does locate those stops. So again, we're looking for a more uniform parking standard, knowing that a lot of our ADUs could potentially be those garage conversions, which wouldn't require parking to begin with. So looking at the ADU standards, we also are looking at our single family standards at the same time. Our current standards for parking in single family homes require two quote unquote garage spaces. These currently must be located outside the setback. So what this potentially begins to create is, if I'm a property owner, I don't want to do an ADU, but instead I want to convert my garage into additional living space, whether it's an additional bedroom or an additional living room, or just really expand my existing living space. I would have to provide those two garage spaces somewhere on my property outside the front setback. However, if I decided to just throw a very small kitchen and provide a dividing wall and created an ADU, I no longer have to provide that parking. So it's really creating this inequity amongst property owners to create units versus creating additional space. And maybe in some instances, some families don't want to do that ADU, but they need that extra space for live-in family members or to create additional income by renting out a room, et cetera. So city staff is proposing to eliminate the garage stand, quote unquote garage standard, and replace it with performance standards. This is something that the Planning Commission at their previous meeting had recommended the City Council also eliminate at a 4-1 vote. So again, those performance standards, and just to back up, those performance standards are making sure that parking is within a driveway, paved or all-weather surface, and fits certain parking dimensions. But again, this is something that the council has flexibility on, but the Planning Commission has recommended elimination of this. The other main ordinance change is allowing for tiny homes. So this is a direction you have provided to us at city staff level just over a year ago to draft regulations and consider these temporary dwellings. The state has made it very clear to city staff that these are considered temporary dwellings because they're on a chassis. So because of that, they aren't considered ADUs. They are considered temporary. They're supposed to have tags on them. But what this does is provide another option for our existing property owners to provide that housing, whether it's temporary, whether it's going to be there 5, 10, 15 years. But again, it's a less expensive model to construct as it's basically constructed off-site, brought on-site, whether it's through a crane or some order. It's on a wheel, so it can't be through a crane, but it's brought into the backyard and it's placed there. So again, it is a very much cheap option for property owners to provide that additional housing, even if it's on a temporary basis. So our proposed tiny ordinance allows for one tiny home where there's an existing single-family residence. If an ADU is constructed, it actually must be removed. And this is something we worked with HCD, or the California Housing and Community Development Department. We vetted this ordinance prior to going to Planning Commission, and they made it very clear that they don't consider a tiny home a dwelling unit at this time. So that's why that is written in there. They're between 100 and 400 square feet in size. Again, must be on a registered vehicle since they are considered temporary mobile, and they must connect to water and sewer, and cannot be an RV or camping trailer, et cetera. The state law makes a differential between the two. Our tiny home ordinance models very similar to what was recently passed in San Luis Obispo, as well as other municipalities throughout California. And again, this is another sort of tool in the tool chest that we can give our property owners to provide that affordable housing in a flexibility and form that they choose to. So again, additional options for property owners. As a part of this over-encompassing ADU ordinance, we looked at accessory structures, and that's to increase height from 14 to 16 feet, again, to sort of maintain consistency with height for the R1 zone, and that changes in there as well as ADUs. We also wanted some clarity when it came to accessory structures. The first one is clarifying decks greater than 30 inches must meet setbacks. So most decks are typically low on the ground and don't require a permit and can go to the setbacks. Require covenants for workshop or studios. And again, this is really just to differentiate between an ADU and what is just extended living space or a art studio, et cetera. Also, we want to limit the number of accessory structures to 2 per lot. Again, so just really the point of an accessory structure is that it is accessory to a single-family residence or multifamily use, et cetera. So it's actually accessory to the primary use. We also clarify in this ordinance that 120 square feet or 10 feet in height doesn't need a permit. The reason being is, one, the California Building Code mentions that, but two, these are the type of structures that you go buy at the Home Depot or other types of, Tough Shed sells them, and they come in that variety, 10 by 12, 10 by 10, 10 by 11, but they're all under 120, all under 10 feet in height. You can go higher than that, you just have to then meet the setbacks. So then that's the biggest differential between the two, because again, these are more garden sheds. These typically don't have electricity. They're not meant for living space. So they're as long as they're under 10, under 120 square feet in height, they can encroach within the setbacks. So some of the additional amendments that are included as part of this ordinance is to amend the land use table to allow ADUs and junior ADUs, amend the land use table to allow for tiny homes. As mentioned earlier, amend the land use table to allow increased heights north of Grand Avenue. from 14 feet to 16 feet for across the board for consistency. So currently our code says 15, but again, this would increase to 16. That is something that the council does have discretion over. So if it is something that you want to go higher, most certainly we are open to that. And then amend definitions for consistency with the proposed changes. Just, again, make sure everything is crossing our T's and dotting our I's. And then finally, we revise the short-term rental to relate it to fines and to refer to the master fee schedule per working with our city attorney, again, as we ever so slightly tweak our STR ordinance. So the recommendation before you this evening is to conduct the first reading by title only. Introduce the ordinance amending the GwRiver Beach Municipal Code, Article 9, accessory dwelling units and related sections, and schedule a second reading and adoption of the ordinance and resolution approving a local coastal program amendment at the next regulatory scheduled City Council meeting. And again, to clarify, there is a discrepancy in Section D of the ADU ordinance where it does say up to 1,200 square feet, but again, that will be based on your council discussion, but I just wanted to include that for the record. And with that said, I'm going to open up to question or comments and give this back to the mayor.
Very good. Thank you for that presentation, Mr. Castillo. Appreciate that. Well put together. And let's see if we have any questions from the council. We'll start with Councilmember Lance.
Thank you. Just two questions. I wanted to ask about the reasoning behind the requirement to hook up to city water and sewer for the tiny homes. I know, as someone that watches way too much HGTV, that a lot of people, the attractive elements of a tiny home is a lot of them have like composting toilets and this kind of thing. So if those features were included in the tiny home, would that still require city sewer hookup?
Yes. You know, it's funny. Me and my fiance also watch the same HGTV show. So, but yes, it would require a water and sewer hookup. One, sanitary is the biggest one. The California Building Code actually does have a gray water section in there, so it wouldn't preclude those items from being completed, but they would just need to be reviewed by the building official as a part of the building application. In the tiny home section, it does allude to being able to be off the grid, but again, it needs to be reviewed. It provides us some flexibility to work with those type of homeowners, but it eventually has to fall under the guise of the California Building Code, which needs to provide sanitary sewer and water and those type of things. They do create hookup systems for that specifically that drop into existing systems that would just be an added cost as a part of a tiny home.
Okay. And then my other question was kind of specific, I suppose, but regarding the accessory structures and kind of the slight changes that are being made in heights requirements to, I think it's currently 14 feet, we're bringing it back to 10 feet as far as the structures and the setback requirements. Correct me if I'm wrong for misunderstanding that. So for example, I potentially have a shed that's approximately 12 feet high, and it's, you know, within the corner of my lot. The new requirement may require me to move that, which would be very difficult. I'm wondering if there's any grandfathering that would happen or whether everybody would kind of have to bring themselves up to the ordinance.
That's an excellent question, Councilmember Lance. So what the rules do is what we're saying is we're defining how high of a structure can encroach into setbacks. And we're also defining, so if you're under 10 feet, you can encroach in. It's clear. It's crystal clear in our code. It's what the advice we've been giving to our constituents to begin with, for those that, you know, we give them options. And we are a firm believer here at City Staff to provide property owners options when it comes to those items. You can most certainly go past the 10 feet, but then at 12 feet, as you mentioned, you would then have to abide by a setback. So if it's a 5 foot on the side or 10 foot on the rear, you would just need to make sure that those are within the setbacks for new structures. As for all structures that have been constructed, those are currently existing non-conforming. So what that means is it'll remain there. It'll be able to stay there. Don't touch it. It's fine. Most certainly we won't require you to go out and move that shed anytime soon. But again, if you're looking to modify that at some point in time, then that's something that we would then work with our property owners to resolve any potential outstanding issues and really, again, be flexible in implementing this ordinance.
Okay, thank you. And I'll reserve my comments for our discussion.
Very good. Thank you for those questions. Next, we'll go to Councilmember Nichols, see if she has any questions. Not hearing Councilmember Nichols come on the line. We'll go ahead and go to Councilmember Shaw.
Hi. Yeah, just a couple. Just want to make sure I'm understanding. So the way it's drafted now, it allows the ADUs up to 1,200 square feet. Is that right?
That's correct. And again, that was a typo on my end. So I will take personal responsibility for that. Hopefully, I might have been a mind reader. I don't know. Please prove me wrong. But with that being said, yes, it is showing as written today, 1,200 square feet. But as recommended by the Planning Commission, it was to leave it as a state standard of 1,000 square feet or the one bedroom, 50% or less, et cetera. But again, that is an item per our presentation that the council most certainly can go over and debate. You just can't go over 1,200 square feet because that is the state max out on that.
Okay, and then the 16-foot height. So does that mean, I'm just trying to picture what that means. So obviously that would be a first floor ADU, you know, like one over a garage would already be over that height. Would that mean, for example, the entire house can be 16 feet high or just the ADU?
What that means is, so if you're under, in our current ordinance and as proposed, if you're under, and let's take as we're proposing it, if you're under 16 feet in height, you do not need to have the Planning Commission hearing. So if you're just proposing the one-story height, you just automatically continue to go. Most of our items that we see that go to Planning Commission are two stories in nature north of Grand Avenue, because again, we live in paradise and we want to view paradise. And so that's what people want to do, is they want that second story. So most of those second story buildings are already going to Planning Commission to begin with. In this instance, if it is an existing garage and someone wants to construct an ADU above that existing garage, then it would need to go to Planning Commission.
Okay. And then just my last question was just going over the part in the report about RENA numbers. So we're projecting we will hopefully possibly get 20 a year of these ADUs. So that could potentially bring up be 180 ADUs. And those would qualify in our RENA numbers as the low and moderate. How do they decide where those go? Or that's how the state feeds them?
Good evening, Councilmember Shaw. Let me address that. The city has actually looked at the current rents of ADUs in the city, and they've come up with this formula. So they are projecting, and we will get credit towards, in our housing element, for 90 low-income ADUs and 90 moderate-income ADUs. And obviously the low-income units are more important in meeting our low-income RENA number.
All right. Yeah, that's really good news. That could help us a lot. Those were my only questions. Thank you.
Very good. I'll go back to Councilmember Nichols, see if she has gotten her landline back.
Can you hear me?
Yes. Barbara, did you have any questions on this item?
Not really. I think it's something that's going to be developed slowly and as quickly as people want it, I guess. the qualification for RENA is of utmost importance, and I just heard that explanation again.
Okay.
So that's
very good. Appreciate that. So next we'll go to Mayor Pro Tem Bright, see if there's any questions that she has.
Thank you. I do. Just a couple. Would you kindly please explain to me what by right means?
Certainly. But by right basically means as long as you meet the California Building Code. So what that means is you create a plan set and you meet all the setbacks and you meet all the requirements for water, sewer, electrical, and other details, you then can just continue and just get a building permit issued. In some instances in our code, and Bruce, if I get this incorrect, please chime in, but in some instances it requires both a development permit and a building permit. Depending on your location, if you're in the coastal zone, you would need to get a coastal development permit, a development permit, and a building permit. So again, the by right nature, especially on these garage conversions and other things, is just simply a requirement to get a building permit and no other additional discretionary review.
Okay, so, but someone still does, like, review their, does someone review their plans and that sort of thing?
Oh, yes, very much so. As much as I've attempted to napkin sketch my ADU that's currently in process for construction, it's been rejected multiple times. So we are reviewing those, and we are helping our residents out every step of the way, and that's the biggest key, is this is a very complicated process in terms of most residents and just helping them to understand and guide them to where they need to go to get a building permit is job number one for us when it comes to ADUs.
Okay, very good. Thank you. That's very helpful. So then my other question is regarding the two-car garage issue. In the staff report, it says state law effectively eliminates the ability of cities to require a two-car garage. So does that mean even someone comes to you with new construction, they have no intent at that time to build an ADU or a JADU, we still can't say you have to have a two-car garage?
No, what we're saying is you can, and that's again, it's when our current existing code requires single-family residences. If you have a new single-family residence, you are required to construct a two-car garage. I'll tell you what, most developers, when and even if you're building your own, you purchase a lot, you demo a house, you're more than likely going to build a garage. It's probably about 98% of the time you're building a garage because that's what you do. And again, these are all based on market rate and market forces. What we're saying is, and I'm going to use that example again of the garage conversion. If I want to convert my garage into a additional living space or an additional bedroom, sure, but I don't want it to be an ADU, I am then penalized, and then I have to go find somewhere on my piece of property to accommodate two new garage spaces on top of the construction costs that it takes to convert that garage. Right. However, if I decide to make it into an ADU, state law says you don't have to do any parking. City of River Beach, you cannot require parking. And so again, that kind of unfairly penalizes families and other homeowners that simply just want to add space to their property. And we have many permits that have gone through this that we have told, folks that are trying to get permits, you need to add garage spaces. So again, this is why we're requesting this, to basically say, okay, you do require parking somewhere on your site that meets the performance standards, but they don't necessarily need to be in a garage. They can be outside, they can be in a driveway, they can be tandem, as long as they meet the specific performance standards.
I get that. Because we're talking about existing construction. For correct, new construction, so are you suggesting that for new construction as well, we eliminate a garage requirement?
Yes, I am. The city staff is suggesting that. And again, new construction, new development, we are. These are market forces. And when it comes to new construction, these are complete market forces that are requirement. And again, this is single-family homes only. We're not talking PUDs and we're not talking multifamily. But for single-family homes, we are requesting the council eliminate that garage requirement. Now, they still need to provide two off-street parking spaces. And that's not to say that they just completely eliminate parking whatsoever, but it really then becomes up to the builder to make that.
So they could do a carport or a tandem or whatever, or even just a paved space or whatever, an appropriate space.
Correct.
Okay. All right. That's what I needed to know. I think that those are my questions. Thank you very much.
Very good. Thank you. I just had one additional question, I believe it is. The difference between a tiny home and a manufactured home when it comes to being declared either by right or whatnot. I know as we started bringing this item forward, we were potentially talking about having a pre-manufactured or a manufactured home standard plans that someone could come in and say, I want to do this. It's already been approved by the building department and I want to go build that. So is the since they are both effectively vehicles, is it really a size determination that a tiny home is under 400 square feet and a manufactured home under, as drafted, 1,200 square feet? Would that be the difference between those two parts of the ordinance?
Yes and no. So you kind of, Mr. Mayor, you have three items that you're describing. Let's take item number one. Item number one is a preset of building plans ready to go off the shelf, and that is something that staff will be exploring as a part of our SB2 funds, which we'll discuss, I believe, in a couple weeks. So that's one thing where we as a city, and hopefully we can get with other, you know, municipalities to come up locally to come up with a set of plans so that, hey, I want to get option A, color scheme 2, elevation 3, and I want to build that in my backyard. So that's a pre-made plan set. It's what's called a stock plan. The second item is the manufactured home, and that's a pre-manufactured home, which has a HCD tag or a HUD tag that has been recognized as a home that's built off-site and then fully constructed on a property. Those are allowed as a part of your ADU ordinance. Those are even allowed if you wanted to demo a complete house and just put in a manufactured home. Those are allowed. So that's a big difference between a manufactured home. And then finally, you have the tiny home. And the tiny home is specific that it's a chassis on wheels. So the biggest thing I can tell you is it needs to be on a registered vehicle trailer, whereas a manufactured home doesn't need to do that. Manufactured home already has a tag. So I essentially, again, same sort of setup. I will construct this thing offsite, whether it's in my garage or out somewhere, and I'm hauling it to my property. I put it in my backyard. It needs to remain on the trailer itself and then connect in the city sewer. That's how a tiny home works.
Gotcha. Thank you for that clarification. I definitely appreciate that. So that's the end of my questions, and I know this is a public hearing, and I believe we do have several people on the line that do want to provide comments. So I'll go ahead and open the public hearing and turn it over to our city clerk for to see who we have in line for comments. Madam City Clerk.
We have Mike Compton.
Mike Compton.
Good evening, Mr. Compton.
Hi, Mike Compton, resident Grover Beach. I listened to the May 27th Planning Commission meeting on the ADU subject, and I've also read the development application 2012, which you guys are reviewing right now. And it's really interesting in many ways, but I recommend that our city officials look at this June 24th Planning Commission agenda. Application 2013, a development permit to construct a second-story addition in the R1 zone, North Grand Avenue, address 636 Parkview. And specifically, look at the proposed floor plan and the plot plan on page 4. There you'll see two separate curb cutouts with two separate driveways, two separate garages, a kitchen on the bottom floor, and a kitchen proposed for the top floor. And after this project is built, they can easily just go over the counter and put in an ADU with the simple wall built in the entry and have two units. When reading the staff report could possibly say something that, hey, look, this looks like it's an ADU. And advise the Planning Commission and that this looks like it's an ADU. And the reason why is because maybe this is something that the neighbors should know about, and also how their views are going to be affected and how their density very well will also be increased. Right now, there is a height limit on North Grand, on the R1 north side of Grand, of 16 feet. There's also a 16-foot height limit for the ADU. But yet, in this case, the person putting up the unit and then probably guessing that he's coming back with an ADU. And what's to say that the people should know that possibly what is happening, and maybe the people in North Grover would be more accepting of their garages, their neighbors' ADU in their garage versus going up 25 feet, destroying their ocean views or dune views or whatever views that they may have, and then come through and put in an ADU. I just think that maybe it's time that the city council really consider about limiting the height at 16 feet on some of these properties that are in the R1 zone and not let people build up to 25 foot. And one other thing is that in this report, as I recall, there is an area in North Grover Beach that is not affected by the ADU. However, they're letting it put the ADUs in there. Maybe those people in those areas don't want ADUs. Has anybody thought of that? I remember when the PUDs were put into play. It was like a slow roll going through. And it developed, and there were a lot of improvements, and things changed. The city changed with it. This right here isn't a slow roll. It's going to be a fast burn. And there's going to be sparks in here, next door to you, real quick. Like, it's happened in my neighborhood. Just saying, there's a lot to really look at here. And I hope you guys take the time to look at that project. And I appreciate your time listening to me. Thank you very much.
Jeff, you're muted.
Sorry, thank you for that. I appreciate that. So thank you, Karen. So Madam Clerk, we have another commenter on this item.
Yes, we do, Bob Peralt.
Good evening, Mr. Peralt.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor, members of the council. I appreciate the opportunity to be able to say a few things to you. First of all, I support the ordinance. I do think that tiny homes will provide a good alternative in terms of providing the affordable housing that the community so desperately needs. I do have a question, though, and it's relative to the utility fees. Has there been any discussion or any decisions regarding adjusting the fees for these homes so they're not the same as single-family homes, for instance?
Very good. So, Bob, was there any other questions you had on that? Because we'll capture all those.
That's it.
Very good. Thank you for those questions and those comments. So, Madam City Clerk, is there anyone else who has public comment on this item?
No, there is not.
Very good. Then I will go ahead and close the public hearing and bring it back to the council for future discussion and possible direction on the second reading. So I heard two questions, and realizing that the Planning Commission has not, it sounds like they've discussed the agenda item on the 14th, but it hasn't come up. It may come to the council on appeal on that. So I want to be sensitive to how that would work. But is there either Mr. Buckingham or Mr. Castillo, is there a high level discussion that you can provide in response to the question from the first caller?
So as far as let's take this to the higher level in terms of ADU requirement, the state of California requires all municipalities to allow for accessory dwelling units in either existing or proposed single-family residences or multifamily residences. We do not, as a municipality, we do not have control over that. That is a state requirement. I'll leave it at that. So that is something that we are required to implement. And the only things that we have control is what you mentioned earlier in the presentation. That is the minimum size of units, parking standards, maximum size of units. So the state will allow you to be flexible to lessen some of the standards, but they won't let you be more restrictive than the standards. And that's something to keep in mind when it comes to accessory dwelling units. So again, as much as we want to have this discussion of where can we allow those, the state has already overrode us and said you shall allow those in single-family residential districts and multifamily residential districts under these parameters.
Okay, I definitely appreciate that that clarification. So I guess the next question that brings up for me is, what kind of notification requirements is part of the ordinance? I don't specifically remember what were in there, or has the state already superseded that as well?
So the requirements are, if it is a discretionary approval. So again, let's take this 16-foot past North Grand, if that gets approved by the council. If I propose a 20-foot ADU over my existing garage in an R1 zone, then the discretionary approval hearing requires a 300-foot minimum or 300-foot radius of notification. If I'm in the coastal zone, it's a 300 plus 100 for the occupants as well. However, if I'm under, let's just say I decide to make an ADU that's attached to my home at 15 feet, then I meet every other standard, then that is a building permit only, no notification needed. It's the equivalent of me either remodeling my kitchen or converting my garage into some other type of space, or even building an accessory structure like a tool shed that's a little bit larger than 120 square feet. I would just need simply a building permit and post that permit once it is issued by the city on my property.
Very good. Thank you for that clarification. So I think the only other question I saw was from Mr. Peralta with regards to fees for ADUs and adjustments. And I think we've already accomplished that, but if you could remind us what ADU fee structures are currently.
Sure, Mayor Lee. 2 years ago, the council waived all development impact fees for accessory dwelling units. So there have not been any connection fees, water, sewer, or any other development impact fees that we charge for ADUs. Only your building permit review is charged. The state now, in the latest legislation, has also done that for ADUs that are 750 square feet or less. The state would still allow you to charge fees for ADUs if you're over 750 square feet. But again, currently the council does not charge any utility connection fees for ADUs.
Very good, thank you. So let's see if that generated any additional questions from the council. So it looks like Councilmember Shaw, looks like you are still muted, but it looks like you might have a question, since I saw your lips moving.
Yeah, I was yelling at my kids, but I do have a question. And I don't know if you're allowed to answer this, so if you can't, that's okay, because I know if something from the Planning Commission gets appealed, so I don't want to go into that territory of jeopardizing a future hearing, but the caller that called in, he seemed to take issue because it seemed like, from looking at these plans, that there wasn't going to be one ADU on the property, but rather two ADUs. And I thought I read in one of the materials that you could do a junior ADU and an ADU, but you couldn't do two ADUs. So I don't know if there's anything more you could explain to us.
Council, let me interject one thing, if I may. I would caution you, so far the discussions have been very general in regards to the requirements of state law, but as we're getting more and more closer to the specifics of this particular matter that may ultimately come to you on a basis of appeal, I would recommend that you don't further a discussion. Allow the Planning Commission to hear the matter, and then whatever their ruling is can be appealed to the council, and you as a neutral body at that point in time would get into the discussion. But more importantly, there would be a significant amount of evidence given to you, not only coming from the Planning Commission, but at that hearing, your appeal hearing, if one were to come to you, that would give you a basis upon which to ask these questions and make determinations. So that would be my recommendation for this evening.
Okay, yeah, that's fine. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Hale, for that. Let's see, Councilor or Mayor Pro Tem Bright, did you have any other further questions?
No, thank you.
Okay. Council Member Lance?
Just comments, merely.
Very good. Council Member Nichols?
None.
Very good. Then we will go ahead and come back to comments, and realizing that the action before us this evening is to conduct the first reading and then schedule it for a second reading. So, but we'll go to comments. Council Member Lance?
Just generally, I am supportive of the 1,200 square feet as well as the 150 square feet minimum. I've lived in very tiny places, and it's an opportunity to not have roommates, and I think that that's a beautiful thing sometimes for people in their lives. And I'm also supportive of the not the requirement to construct a two-car garage. I know I've probably mentioned this before and I'm beating a dead horse, but with our home remodel, we wanted to convert our garage into living space. We have a single-car garage, and at the time, we would have been required to construct a two-car garage on our already, our house is already at the front of our setback ability. So it ended up working best for us and our family in the space we needed, but it did seem kind of silly that in order to use our one-car garage as living space, we would have to construct a two-car garage in its place. And I think that that could, in our situation, it nearly doubled our remodel costs, unfortunately. And I think that having that opportunity for people, specifically in a lot of our homes, you know, our home was constructed, I believe, in 1959, and a lot of our homes in the area are kind of those beach cottages that were constructed in the late 50s, early 60s. So having that opportunity for people to update them to fit modern needs of families, I think could be really beneficial for our community. I'm not very sure about new construction, which Council Mayor Pro Tem Bright was alluding to in her questioning, but as far as existing homes, that would be my comment. Thank you.
Okay, very good. So comments from Council Member Shaw.
Thank you. I support all of these changes as written. I do support going up to 1,200 square feet with the ADU, and I am glad to have the flexibility for builders to not include the garage. It seems like it would only be fair just to builders to allow that. I think I think going down to the 150 square feet is also fine. Although I've lived in a 250 square foot apartment and could touch both walls, so I'm not sure what a 150 square foot apartment looks like, but more power to them. So I'm just really glad that we're looking at this, and I do want to respond to some of the comments. I always thank people who call in. It's my understanding, and my realtor explained to me when I moved into Grover, views aren't necessarily protected. You know, I think our Planning Commission does look long and hard at people's view sheds and takes that into consideration. But it was actually one of the reasons we chose the house that we did. We were debating between a couple, but because the views may not be unblockable. And something struck me when I was reading through our consent agenda. We had the hazard mitigation plan, but it had a really nice blurb about how Grover Beach came about, and it really didn't get developed until it was advertised as a place for the common man. And that's what it was developed as. And that's when people, and I mean, as much as we all love D.W. Grover, no one really took an interest in this place until they developed housing for the common man. And we are in a housing crisis in this state. And these ADUs are now housing for the common man, from millennials who need them to rent them out to afford their mortgage, to seniors who need them to keep from becoming homeless. We just saw an article how senior women in this county are being hit harder with homelessness than ever before. And these ADUs are going to be a godsend for a lot of them. So I will say I've lived in an R1 neighborhood in Grover for 10 years. And for 10 years, I've had two units on both sides of me. So I've, even though I live in an R1, I've always had ADUs next to me. And no one consulted me on that because I moved in. I didn't know they were there until I got here. And we've all lived in harmony, and it's been fine. And I know you do hear neighbors, but you know, we are the densest community in the county. And that's something that you appreciate when you live here. And I sure do appreciate having neighbors to talk to right now. So, you know, I just wholeheartedly really applaud these measures, and I'm excited about them, and I'm really glad it's going to help our RENA numbers as well, because if we don't build up those numbers, we could be losing state funding in the future. So it's a have to, but it's also for me a want to. So I'm just applaud staff, and I'm glad to support this.
Very good. Next we'll go to, I guess, Councilmember Nichols. Did you have any comments?
I agree with what Miriam said wholeheartedly. I think this is something that is going to be very important, especially for seniors.
Very good. So any comments from Mayor Pro Tem Bright?
Nothing new other than I do support the changes that have been discussed. And regarding the garage issue, I was a little concerned about that. However, I do believe that the market will tell how that's going to go. I'm happy to hear that it will not apply to PUDs or planned developments, that sort of thing. But the one-off single family homes, I think that's just fine. Mm-hmm. I think they did an excellent job on this long report and made it extremely readable and understandable. And that, to me, is incredibly important and really not a very easy job. So I want to thank staff very much for that, because it really makes our job a lot easier as well as those in the public who do take the time to read these things. So thank you very much. And I am certainly happy to support all of these changes. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you for all those comments. And I'll just reiterate that I'm supportive of the first reading and then moving it to the second reading tonight as well. I think the changes supported by or recommended by staff and supported by the council are going to help to address some of those RENA numbers as well as the housing issues locally. The one caution I have is more for the community, I guess, than for the council. It's realizing that as things change and modify, and two-car garages, which haven't really been the norm for any longer, we've started to reduce our requirements for parking from some actions that we've taken over the course of the last several years, and we might be putting pressure on our streets until the kind of the society gets away from everyone having vehicles. So I think there may be a little bit of a pressure on parking until the younger generation starts to buy homes and live in units, and then either Uber continues to take hold or mass transit comes in even stronger. But I'm supportive of this. So who would like to make a motion to move this item forward?
Well, I guess I'll give it a go. Okay. So I'll make a motion that we conduct the first reading by title only, introduce the ordinance amending Grover Beach Municipal Code Article 9, Accessory Dwelling Unit and Related Sections. Shall I do them both now?
Yes, please.
Okay, thank you. And schedule the second reading and adoption of the ordinance and a resolution approving a local coastal program amendment at the next regularly scheduled City Council meeting.
I'll second.
Very good. We have a motion by Mayor Pro Tem Bright, second by Councilmember Lance. Barring any discussion by someone raising their hand, Madam City Clerk, roll call, please.
Mayor Pro Tem Bright.
Yes.
Councilmember Lance.
Yes.
Councilmember Nichols.
Yes.
Councilmember Shaw.
Yes.
Mayor Lee.
Yes, very good. So we have conducted our first reading of that. We are 2 hours into our meeting, or actually, I guess that's 2 hours into our broadcast. So we're an hour and a half into the meeting. Does anybody want or need a break at this time?
Yes, I would like one, please.
Okay, very good. Let's go ahead and take about a 5 minute break or a 10 minute break. We'll return at 7:45. Thank you, everyone. If everyone is back, I'll go ahead and reconvene our meeting back at 7:44 and bring up the next item, which is item number 10 under regular business, which is the adoption of fiscal year 2021 budget and the fiscal year 2021-25 capital improvement program. I understand from the city manager that I get to go directly to our administrative services director, Purcell, for her brief presentation.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. Tonight, I will be highlighting the fiscal year 2021 total citywide budget of $30.84 million that includes the general fund of $12.96 million, the capital projects fund of $1.17 million, the enterprise funds that include water and wastewater of $8.72 million, and special revenue funds of $7.99 million. The general fund, which is our primary fund, is estimated to show a small surplus of approximately $36,000 of revenues over expenditures, with ending reserves of $3.97 million, or 32% of operating expenditures, which is significantly higher than the council policy goal of 25%. The five-year CIP plan includes $8.5 million in funding in fiscal year 2021, which is about 28% of the total citywide budget, including $300,000 from the general fund, $3.3 million from the Measure K-14, our street bond fund, two partial funds to be used for water main, other special revenue funds of $1.5 million, and $1.1 million from the enterprise funds. After reviewing the proposed budget on June 1st, Council provided direction on three items that included, number one, adding $20,000 to the general fund operating budget for security cameras at Grover Heights Park and Skate Park at $10,000 each. And number two, adding sidewalk infill along 14th Street, which would be part of the upcoming repair project, costing an estimated $100,000 and funded by Measure K-14. And number three, business and childcare assistance that include the business microgrant program to support small businesses that have been impacted by COVID, using $100,000 in SB 1090 funds or the Diablo Power Plant Settlement funds, and then $50,000 in general fund reserves. and $50,000 from general fund. So the recommendation is to approve resolutions to adopt the fiscal year 2021 budget and fiscal year 21-25 capital improvement program, set the fiscal year 2021 appropriation limit from tax proceeds, and establish authorized positions in departments for 2021, or provide alternate direction to staff. And with that, I'll take any questions or comments.
You're on mute, Mr. Mayor.
I will unmute myself and now say thank you, Ms. Purcell, for that very good presentation, and see if there's any questions from councils. We'll start with Council Member Shaw.
No questions from me. We had a really thorough discussion last time, and I just want to thank staff again for putting together such a good budget. Thank everyone for a balanced budget, and would encourage the community, because they're always, you know, there's been recently some questions about our budget and police budget. You know, please take a look at it, because it's a very readable document for that reason. But no, I don't have any questions. Thank you.
Very good. Appreciate that. So next we'll go to Council Member Nichols, see if she has any questions.
Well, Miriam stole all my comments, as usual.
Very good.
So, you know, I am just so proud of our staff for being able to do this and make adjustments and still have us in the black. Thank you.
Very good. Council Member Lance, any questions? Or comments?
Sure. No questions. As Council Member Shaw mentioned, we did discuss this at a fairly substantive conversation last meeting. I will say that, you know, multiple conversations we've had with the city manager and among ourselves, this is a fluid document. If things come up over the year, there is an opportunity to shift money around as needed, as we think is necessary for the benefit of our community. So we are adopting it as proposed right now, or potentially adopting it as proposed right now, assuming everybody's on the same page, knowing that there is opportunity for change during the fiscal year. If
Very good. Thank you. And Mayor Pro Tem Bright, any questions?
No, I have no questions. It's very straightforward, very readable budget, as Miriam said. So no, I have no questions. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you. And I don't have any questions either. So as I concur with my colleagues that yes, it was a very well thought out, very well packaged budget, and meets the needs, expressed needs of the community with regards to their services that they're looking for, and we're providing those in an economical and expeditious fashion for that. So I will go ahead and open this up to the public, see if there's any members of the public that want to comment on this item, and we'll see Madam City Clerk if there's anyone on the line. And I should say, as she comes forward, that if you do want to make a comment on the budget this evening, please call in at area code 805-321-6639.
And we have no callers online.
Very good. Thank you. Then I will go ahead and close that, bring it back to the council for proposed motion and or action.
I'm ready to make a motion, if that's okay.
The floor is yours.
I'll make a motion that we adopt resolutions to adopt and appropriate funds for the fiscal year 2020-2021 budget and fiscal year 2021-2025. Capital Investment Program, set the fiscal year 2020-2021 appropriations limit from tax proceeds, and establish authorized positions in departments for fiscal year 2020-2021.
I'll second that.
We have a motion by Councilmember Shaw, second by Mayor Pro Tem Bright. Madam Clerk, roll call, please.
Councilmember Shaw?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Bright?
Yes.
Councilmember Lance?
Yes.
Councilmember Nichols?
Yes.
Mayor Lee?
Yes. Very good. So that does pass, and we have a budget for next fiscal year. Very good, everyone. Thank you for the work on that, and we look forward to working throughout the course of the year to make sure that the services are provided in accordance with community and council direction. And staff does a great job of implementing the budget, and I appreciate everybody's work on this to get us to this point and moving forward into the next fiscal year. So with that, unless there's any items remaining on number 10 that we need to provide direction to city staff on, which I don't see the city manager moving like we do, we will go ahead and move into item number 11, which is the sales tax measure policy direction. So City Manager Brunson.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor and council members. And as City Clerk Sims is pulling up the presentation on screen, I'll just take a quick moment and thank the council for your policy leadership on the action that you just did. The council just adopted a $30 million budget for the city of Grover Beach, including a capital budget to continue advancing city infrastructure needs, an operating budget to continue providing the services that our community expects of city government day in, day out. And I want to thank the role of our staff in coming up with a budget that reflects the council's policy interests and puts resources around priorities. That's the whole nature of our goal setting process. And this action that you just took was actually the fifth agenda item on our budget since January. So this has been a very deliberative, iterative process where the council has had multiple opportunities to set the direction that you need to set, to define what's important and define the resources that helps carry out what's most important. And again, I applaud the council for your policy guidance and leadership in coming up with a balanced budget that helps to address our needs as a community going forward. So this is actually a really good platform for our next item, which is our sales tax measure policy direction discussion item. So just for background information, if we can advance to the next slide. Ms. Sims, if we can advance to the next slide, thank you. The council has seen a couple different agenda items on May 4th at your budget hearing on June 1st that regarding our city's financial projections. We have seen a significant downturn in estimated revenues, $700,000 in this current fiscal year and $800,000 next fiscal year, all tied to the COVID-19 pandemic and related economic impacts. Those are real dollars that were going to be put to good use in supporting our community for capital projects, for paying down pension costs, for important community needs. Like most cities, we took a lot of steps to rein in our spending, rein in projects. We froze travel and training expenses. We froze discretionary spending to focus on what was truly necessary to help make sure we have a balanced budget. Council on May 4th provided direction for us to come back to you about a prospective funding measure for the November 2020 ballot to address unfunded needs. I'll reference that in 2019, we conducted a community survey that had a question about a potential sales tax measure that polled at roughly 66% support for a 0.5% increase that would generate roughly $800,000 a year in that estimate. That measure that was polled really was focusing on police and public safety needs as a special tax, which does have a higher threshold of a 2/3 requirement and does not provide flexibility to address emerging community needs as a general measure could do. So with that background in mind, moving forward to the next slide, we wanted to highlight just some three different examples of unmet community needs. Again, to stress that we have done quite a bit in building a solid financial foundation, in having prudent reserves, in having operating budget expenditures to meet our current needs, but there are a number of unfunded, unmet identified community needs that we still have as a community. The first I wanted to highlight is major streets and sidewalk improvements. We've done a tremendous job in implementing our K14 program. Almost 200 blocks of city streets have been repaired since the measure was approved. Our pavement condition index has increased substantially since 2015. However, the major streets, Oak Park Boulevard, West Grand Avenue, Farrell Road, the Pike, 4th Street, those streets have not improved. The pavement condition rating is below 40 for those streets. We have a $10 million price tag for repairing those streets over the next many years. We also have a big improvement needed in sidewalk area improvements. One of the council goals is about being a more pedestrian-friendly community, and while we have done some work in sidewalk improvements, there's a lot more work that needs to be done to fully realize and meet this community need. We've added almost 2 miles through K-14 Street projects, but the money spent on these projects have also taken away from what could be spent on street repair dollars, aside from grant funding we get for some sidewalk improvements. So there is really a limited pool of funding available for sidewalk improvements to really meet this need of being a more pedestrian-friendly city. Going on to the next slide, you'll see a chart that the council has seen before, which shows the PCI, Pavement Condition Index rating, of our local streets relative to major streets. Local streets are in blue, major streets are in red. And the chart really shows that the improvements in local streets is significant, but the condition of major streets has remained stagnant, given the limited funding available for these kind of street improvements that people travel on each and every day. Moving on to the next slide, the other area for unmet community needs really is in the area of business support and assistance. We have seen firsthand the business community has been hit very hard by COVID-19 impacts. It has been a very tough go for our business community. As they're now reopening, they're doing so under very strict health guidance, health standards, and the reopening process is taking time and taking a lot of effort to get right. The council has long identified economic development and business support as a core priority for our city. It's been magnified through our $120,000 contract with the Chamber of Commerce for economic development services through the end of June 2021. We also have a micro grant program that the council authorized to establish $150,000 in one-time funding to support businesses and making this transition to COVID-19 impacts, providing PPE for their employees, and helping to deal with cash flow needs as businesses. This is money that we put into the hands of businesses right away once we finalize our grant application process later this month. I would point out that there is no ongoing funding for these kind of services that support our business community, economic development services to this degree, and business assistance. After these funds run out, there's no ongoing funding identified. So this is another area, another unmet need that could be supported through additional revenue that the city could allocate. And the third example of an unmet need is in the area of public safety staffing. So if we could advance to the next slide, please. Thank you. Public safety staffing is really the foundation, in many ways, of a key aspect of local government. If we don't have a safe community, a secure community, it's hard to have a vibrant, prosperous, and high quality of life in our community. Our public safety services are very responsive. They provide a strong degree of safety response in police services and fire services through our Five Cities Fire Authority, Joint Powers Authority. Our cost per capita for police and fire is on the lower end of our cities in this county compared to other communities. But the level of service that we get for that funding is responsive to the degree that they can keep up with service demand. I would note that in police, we do have significant staffing needs. We have 21 sworn officer positions. This is below the 23 that were recommended in the audit the council received in 2018 for our police department, and really is not sufficient to best meet our needs with regards to service calls and service volume. Our officers do a tremendous job serving the community, but they are responding very quickly to calls and not really having the time necessary to have the proactive community policing work that they would like to do, that we would like them to do across our community. Having some additional officer capacity would really allow us to deepen those connections, bolstering the foot patrols, bike patrols, neighborhood watch programs that really would help augment the role of our police department in providing protection and safety services for our community. Also, I would add that our fire staffing levels have improved in the last few years due to investments that we've made in transitioning reserve firefighters to permanent firefighters. However, looking ahead, there will be future funding needs in both staffing and equipment for our fire services and emergency medical services functions going forward. So building from these unmet needs into our next category of information, which is really just highlighting again in regards to police staffing, I wanted to really focus in on the last stat, officer ratio to calls for service in Grover Beach, the 937. This is really looking at the number of calls for every officer we have in our community. In this particular stat, the higher the number, the busier the department and the tougher it is to really respond to the calls like we do. So ideally, we'd like to have that ratio be a bit lower so that we can spend more time building those community policing connections and work that we wish to do as a police agency. So again, this is a comparison that we think is pretty helpful in really showing how busy our department is. We have the same number of calls as our neighboring city to our east, and we have five fewer officers than they have. So that's just one stat that we're looking at to help show what our capacity needs to be going forward. So building from there to our next slide, we wanted to highlight that we have had a few tax measures in the last election cycle, 2018. We had an increase in our TOT rate, and we changed our BTC, business tax certificate, to a tiered rate structure. These two measures generate about $150,000 a year annually. We did have a cannabis tax approved in 2016, as the council is well aware, that generates roughly $1.5 million a year. These are important tax measures that have helped to stabilize our budget, have helped to prevent the degree of reductions other communities have seen with COVID-19 impacts. We've been able to make targeted investments already, such as in fire services in the last couple of years, and we've been able to build prudent reserves that provide a cushion around future reductions. But I would say that even with these measures, even with this revenue, we still have significant unmet community needs, as identified earlier, that really point to the need to consider something above and beyond what our current financial projections will allow for. So that gets us into looking at a tax measure as a possibility for the November 2020 ballot. So your staff is coming to you and asking the council to consider a sales tax measure for the upcoming ballot in November. Just for the council's reference, the current sales tax rate here in Grover Beach is 7.75%. This does include an existing 0.5% tax that was approved in 2006, measure X06. Every city in the county has this same tax rate. There is consistency across the board in our county. But I would add that every city is also looking at some kind of tax measure for this upcoming ballot for many of the same reasons: unmet community needs, infrastructure needs, or in some cases, balancing the budget. So every community is looking at a measure and considering action in the same time period. I'll add that our neighboring counties, both to the north and south, have higher tax rates than our county. Santa Barbara County ranges from 8% to 9%. Monterey County ranges from 8.25% to 9.25%. And Santa Maria, our neighbor to the south, which is a very significant retail destination, has an 8.75% sales tax rate. So if you look around our county, we have a lower rate overall than our neighboring counties. And I don't know to what degree that really enters into a discussion around shopping here versus shopping elsewhere, but it's a comparison point that I think is relevant as we look at what tax rate makes sense for us. So going from there to the next slide, what we would point out is that a 0.5% sales tax increase would generate roughly $900,000 currently in our latest estimates, similar to Measure X06. So by definition, a 1% tax increase would generate $1.8 million a year annually. By our calculations, 40% of our sales tax revenue is generated by visitors. So that's an important point to consider. 40% of our tax revenues, sales tax revenues, come from those who are traveling into our community, those who are going to the dunes, those who are staying in our hotels, those who are staying in short-term rentals and going to grocery stores. That is where almost half of our sales tax revenue comes from. So they'd be paying this additional tax increase and paying for services that they and others would utilize. On average, the average household would have a cost increase of roughly $8 per month for a 0.5% increase, and then $16 per month for a 1% increase. And that's a household, not per capita, but a household as a whole. So roughly maybe a large pizza, $16 for a large cheese pizza over the course of the month, or for a coffee drink each week would be the equivalent of providing $1.8 million annually in revenues to meet unmet community needs each and every year. The funding would not be taken by the state. It stays local in our community, and the tax would begin April 1, 2021, if enacted. So if the council wished to move forward with a sales tax measure for consideration, there are four key considerations I'm asking the council to consider. One is the type of tax. Is it a general tax, which is able to be utilized to meet emerging needs and ultimately approved by the council as general revenue? Or is it a special tax, which is allocated specifically to what is in the ballot measure and cannot be used for any other purpose? General tax also has a majority vote, and a special tax requires a two-thirds vote. Secondly, is the amount of increase. There are two options that I've identified. One is a 0.5% increase or a 1% increase. However, the council could have another option that you would wish to consider in looking at the amount that you believe makes the most sense. Third is the time frame. There are two main options. One is to have a sunset clause that where the measure would expire after, say, 3 years, 5 years, 10 years, and it have to be renewed in order to continue. The other option is to have no end date, and knowing that the voters can always overturn a measure should it be enacted. Just for the council's reference, our current measures all have no end date. So that is the approach that we have taken as a city to this point. And lastly, the oversight process. We do have an existing City Revenue Oversight Committee, and that could be utilized to provide the important public oversight as part of this particular measure. The council could also choose to create a new committee that was tailored just for this particular measure and provide that oversight function therein. So those are a couple options the council could consider regarding the oversight process. So again, those are four key considerations if the council wishes to provide direction for staff to move forward and considering a ballot measure resolution to bring back to the council. So lastly, if we look at our conclusion, I would say a tax measure is a very significant, very substantive discussion for a council to have in putting forth a measure on the ballot. We've made significant progress in establishing a strong financial foundation, providing services that the community expects of us. That with the second smallest general fund budget, second smallest budget per capita, and the second smallest number of employees in the county, our projections do not provide the necessary revenues for us to meet community needs going forward that have been identified to us, and a tax measure is really an option to help us as a community provide additional funding to meet these needs going forward. So in conclusion, a recommendation that we have from staff is to, if you can go forward, please. Our recommendation tonight is to receive information about the tax measure, which you, council has just received, and then provide direction to us on drafting a resolution with ballot language for the council's consideration. If that was your direction, we would bring this back to you on the July 20th council date, which is the last date before the measure could be formally placed in the ballot for the November 2020 election. And with that, we're glad to take council's questions and comments.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Bronson, for that presentation. So we'll see if there are any questions by council members. We'll start with Council Member Shaw.
No questions for me. I'll just have discussion. Thank you.
Very good. Council Member Lance.
Two things. One, if there were a sunset clause, city manager, would that be something that would be on a ballot again to renew for the public to vote on that?
Yes, Councilmember Lance, if there was a sunset clause, let's say a sunset clause of 5 years, hypothetically, then in order to have the measure, have the funding continue beyond 5 years, there would need to be a subsequent measure placed on the ballot. So it doesn't just automatically continue. But the council at that time would need to place a measure on the ballot to renew that measure in the same process that we're using here.
Okay. And then my second kind of comment question for you, City Manager, is whether you wanted to summarize what was discussed at the steering committee as far as the survey that was taken. I know it wasn't very substantial, but and I'm happy to talk about it in my comments as well, but just maybe just to know.
Sure, I'd be glad to. And also I'll reference that Chamber CEO Jocelyn Brennan is online and can provide some comments as well during public communication. But I'll just add that I did make a brief presentation to the Grover Beach Steering Committee last Friday, which is the Chamber Committee focusing on Grover Beach issues. I provided highlights of the staff report and really kind of walked through many of the same topics I'm walking through with the council this evening. There were only a few questions from the steering committee attendees, and I will defer to Ms. Brennan to share any information from the survey or other feedback that she's heard from the business community.
Very good. Next, we'll go to... Thank you. Sorry about that. So next, we'll go to Councilmember Nichols, see if she has any questions.
I'm wondering if... we go ahead with this, it wouldn't be wise to increase the three-member oversight committee to 5 members, since they'll be doing double duties.
I think that's a very valid point, Councilmember Nichols. That is something the council could consider. If you wish to use the existing oversight committee, which is right now comprised of 3 individuals and 1 seat is vacant, then the council could elect to make that a 5-member body and bolster it up and have that committee maybe even meet a couple of times. Maybe in the beginning of the year, they could meet to identify, provide feedback on key needs and priorities for the council to consider as part of the budget process, and then they could come back in the second part of the year and review expenditures and fulfill their responsibility of submitting a report to the council.
Sounds good.
Very good. Next, we'll go to Mayor Pro Tem Bright, see if there's any questions.
I have no questions.
Very good. So, and I didn't have any questions either, so thank you for everyone for that, Mr. Bronson, for that presentation and the good quick discussion we had on that. Next, we'll go to our Madam City Clerk and see if we have members of the public on the line. And as she's bringing them up, I will remind people that if you do want to call in on this item, please call 805-321-6639 and you'll get put into the queue for comments. So, Madam City Clerk, do we have anyone on the line?
Currently, we just have Jocelyn Brennan.
Very good. Then we'll look forward to having Ms. Brennan come on and provide her comments. Good evening, Ms. Brennan.
Thank you, Council. Can you hear everyone hear me okay?
Yes, we can.
Yes. Great. Thank you. As Mr. Bronson shared, he did present this staff report or a prelude to the staff report at the Grover Beach Steering Committee. We have also emailed out a survey. I think we've sent it out via email 3 times, and we've also put it on social media. And we only had 10 responses. So I'm not sure if this is because people are busy getting back to work right now or if they are trusting that this should go to the voters and come what may. So but from those 10 responses, there was a strong support for public safety and local business assistance and recovery efforts. The third most popular area that they would like to see potential expenditures would be streets. I realize this you're considering probably a general tax, but this I just want to give you some indication of where the business community was. Again, I have not submitted this to you because there was so low of responses. And there was a good percentage, I guess, out of the 10. There were 2 that were undecided. There were... 7 that were opposed to a sales tax increase, and there was 1 person who was in support. Again, I haven't submitted this because I don't think it's enough of a response to be valid, but it was out there for over a week. So I think that tells me that this isn't the top concern of the business community right now. As you can imagine, they have a lot of other concerns, but I did want to provide somewhat of a context for your discussion. and I'm very available good. For any questions.
Very good. Thank you for those comments. I did have one question. Is has the Chamber Board, are you looking to take a position on this if we did put it on the ballot?
So our board is aware of your agenda item tonight. I think what they were most concerned with was the potential areas where, if it was passed, funding would go. So they have not voted to take a position on it, and will support whatever the voters decide.
Okay, very good. Thank you for that.
Okay,
very, very good. Thank you for those questions and comments. So let's see if there's any other members of the public that want to speak on this item. Madam City Clerk.
There are no additional comments.
Very good. Then I will go ahead and close this to the public, bring it back to the council for discussion. And if I'm remembering the slide correctly, we basically have five items to talk about this evening, one of which is I'll call it a go, no go for a ballot measure. And then if we do have a go decision on the ballot measure, then we have four other items, which is a type, the amount, the time frame, and an oversight committee. So let's start with the go, no go. Discussion. So who wants to, I'll start with Councilmember Shaw, see if you have some feedback on a go, no go for a tax initiative.
I would be a go. I mean, we're not deciding this, but I would like the voters to weigh in.
Very good. So Councilmember Lance.
Yes, I'm just prefacing that I think we're all sensitive to the fact that everybody is experiencing fiscal impacts from COVID-19, including our city. So I think that putting it on the ballot for residents to make that decision would be beneficial for everybody to have a say on whether or not they want this. And keeping in mind that it's the voters that reside in the city, and maybe our businesses have, you know, the owners do reside in the city, but it will come down to the residents and who shop here, who live here. So I would be a go.
Very good. Okay, great. Councilmember Nichols, a go, no go decision.
I'm saying go, definitely.
Okay, very good. Mayor Pro Tem Bright.
Well, even though this is kind of a pinky time to be discussing something like this, we must do it now in order to get it on the ballot. And I am always in favor of putting things to the people for their thoughts and their vote. So I say yes, let's put it to the people and let them decide. So I'm a go. Thank you.
Very good. And I am supportive of putting this on the ballot as well. Yes, I do. In echoing my colleague's comments, realize this is a kind of a difficult time to have this conversation. But in looking at the city manager's report and what other cities are doing with regards to this issue, I think now is an appropriate time to have the conversation. But more appropriate, it's time to allow the community and the residents to provide input on whether they want to proceed with a sales tax measure, which would be putting it on the ballot. So I'm supportive of that as well. So I guess that brings us back to our next discussion, which is type, amount, time frame, and oversight. And let's I'll kind of throw out some parameters here and kind of see where it goes to. I guess my first inclination would be a general tax at 1% with no sunset, with a recommendation for an oversight committee that is currently in place with, as Councilmember Nichols mentioned, perhaps increasing that to a 5-member oversight panel as kind of the first, if we're kind of doing my proverbial straw polls. We'll kind of see if that has support from all the council members to do a general 1% without a sunset and utilizing our existing oversight committee. So we'll start with Councilmember Shaw, see if that resonates with you.
Yes, I agree with all those things. I talked to the city manager about this briefly too. I think we just have to be as clear as we can in our messaging, because there are still people who think from the last sales tax measure back in 2006 that that was a special tax for roads when it was in fact a general tax, that, you know, we're giving you ideas of where it's hopefully going to go, but if something comes up, it may, you know, it's not going to, and even if it's for the streets and it all goes to the streets, it's not going to be able to fix every street, because that's also a common thing that I get. I pass the sales tax, why aren't the streets fixed? So I think with social media and messaging, we'll be able to be clearer, but I support the general tax.
Okay, so you go general, 1%, no sunset, and the expanded committee.
Yes. Very good.
Okay, great. Councilmember Lance, does that resonate with you?
Yes.
Very good. Councilmember Nichols?
Yes.
And Mayor Pro Tem Bright?
Yes, I have a little concern with the Oversight Committee expansion, because historically we've had a heck of a time keeping that committee staffed. It's always been an issue, but if we can get five on the Oversight Committee, then I say absolutely. And I too had a conversation with our city manager about that, and having, I think, specific goals set for what those funds will be used for, I think is going to be very important. And also, as Miriam had said, I too still hear about that 2006 measure. I know there was a lot of folks who helped get the word out. They walked the streets, and a lot of them had their own message as to what those funds were going to be used for. And so definitely our message has to be very concise and very clear. But to answer your question, yes, I am on board with all of those points.
Very good. I appreciate that. So we do have a consensus for that, as I am supportive of moving forward with this under those parameters as well. General 1%, no sunset. And I guess perhaps towards Mayor Pro Tem Bright's conversation, and then Councilmember Nichols' conversation about the committee, I think we can, we would have more success with going to a five-member committee than having a separate committee just for oversight of this tax measure, if it does succeed. So, and perhaps putting some additional, I'll call it meat on the bones, so to speak, with regards to that committee, as the city manager mentioned, meeting more than once a year and providing direction or suggestions or recommendations to and feedback from the community to say, we have X number of dollars that we would like to literally have the community say where we would like it to go. Perhaps it's a nonprofit, maybe it's a street program, maybe it's some other initiative, police initiative or community service initiative, and basically each year kind of say, we have X number of dollars, committee, please talk with the community, and community, please come out during our goal setting sessions and literally tell us where you would like to put these funds. And so that really gets it back into the community's hands of how some of the tax proceeds would literally be spent as part of the budget process. So I think that might be something that could go forward with that as a kind of a backdrop to really make it a committee that could be functioning and high level and provide really good input from the community and to the council and staff. So looks like we've got pretty easy consensus on that this evening. Does anyone want to add any additional conversation to that item? Just go ahead and raise your hands. Or okay, wanting to add any additional comments there, I'll turn over to the city manager and or the city attorney and see what other direction you need from us on this item.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor and council members. Staff appreciates your very clear and concise direction that is crystal clear for us. So our next step will be to draft the resolution that will have the ballot language as required by law. We will bring that back to you on the July 20th council date and ask for your adoption at that time, which would formally place the measure on the November 2020 ballot. We would submit that information to the elections office, and we would work on the next steps of our process from that point forward. And certainly we would have a very clear informational items coming from the city about what this measure would be and the type of needs that could be funded through these revenues. So we would be working on that this fall. Also, I'll mention that the city of Rio Grande is discussing a tax measure tomorrow evening, and so I'll be sure to pass along our council's direction to my counterparts in Rio Grande so that they have that information in mind as they consider their own measure in Rio Grande. Since we are one connected community in a lot of ways, having consistency in rates and approaches does offer some consistency for our customers and support for our local governments in general. So with that, again, thank you to the council for your feedback and direction. Staff will work on the next steps from here.
Very good. And just a reminder that the reason it's coming back on July 20th is that we have canceled our July 6th meeting. That is correct. Is that?
Actually, we were scheduled on July 20th. Originally we were skipping the July 20th meeting, put that back on calendar. We have a pretty full agenda on July 6th, and so we were just planning to bring it back within a month's time frame.
Very good. Thank you for that clarification. I had forgotten what dates we had said we were going to go dark on. So we will have a meeting on July 6th, but this item will come back on July 20th. Perfect. Okay. Very good. So, City Attorney, was there anything that you needed to add on this item?
Not at this time.
Very good. Then we will consider that item completed, and that takes us into the next round of public communications, and we'll just check in very quickly with our Madam City Clerk and see if there's any members of the public on the line for our second round of public communications this evening.
We have no one on the line.
And if I heard that correctly, that was no one's on the line.
Correct.
Very good. So then I'll close public communications and then move it into council committee reports, and we'll start with Councilmember Nichols, see if there's any council communication, or excuse me, council committee reports that you have this evening.
No, I have not had any committee reports.
Very good. Next, we'll go to Councilmember Shaw.
Yes, I had a HSOC executive committee meeting, and we just kind of got updates on where we are with possible funding that's coming to us. There could be coming down the pipeline even some more funding to deal with COVID as it relates to the homeless. So that's good. Possibly up to $6.3 million from the CARES Act. But it cannot be spent on building housing, but it can be spent on converting housing because it's really meant to just get people in quickly. And it can also be spent, I understand, on rapid rehousing and eviction prevention, which is something that goes on here a lot. So hopefully more to come on that. And a bit of sad news, I know they announced that the Board of Supervisors was not able to fund the Blue Bag Project anymore, which was the project where the homeless, they could be picking up trash from encampments. So I'm still hopeful that maybe another agency or segment can pick that up. And we have an encampment subcommittee in HSOC. I really just don't want to see that program die away because encampments are, they need the trash taken out. It's a big polluter. It's a huge problem. So that was that. And then the only other meeting I had was League of Cities. But should I talk about that now or?
Yeah, go ahead and we'll combine the two of them for ease.
I had my League of Cities executive board meeting. It was a marathon Zoom of like 8-9 hours. I think I let my son vote on the minutes because I just couldn't take anymore. It was long. So we had a good presentation on Black Lives Matter, and I really appreciated them directing us to the National League of Cities website, like I mentioned earlier, because in these situations, you hate to be inventing or reinventing the wheel. And there are other cities who have dealt with race and diversity issues in a concrete way. So it's worth taking a look at the National League of Cities website if you get a chance. A lot of this stuff is applicable to bigger cities, but I could see it being modified here. So it's worth looking at. And then we had to look at certain ballot measures that are going to be on the ballot. So the long discussion was whether the league would support the split role initiative, which is looking at the Prop 13 protection for corporations, large corporations. And that is going to be on the ballot. And it was a very heated, not heated, but long discussion, a lot of comment. We actually voted, it was 50% to endorse it or support it, but you needed a two-thirds vote to support something. So it ended up being just no position. And it was the same thing on the Rental Affordability Act, which is something that will give cities more control to do rent control if they want to. So kind of the same thing. It ended up being right around 50-50, so there wasn't enough to support. So that was, both were no position. The one measure that the league will support is it's called the Realtors Measure, and it allows people to take their property tax protections with them when they move if they're disabled or older. So it's in small situations for people who probably truly need it. So that was the meat of the meeting. Yes, and they did forward to me the presentations from the meeting. So I can just on Black Lives Matter and that. So I can forward that to the city manager in case anyone wants to look at those presentations from the League of Cities.
Very good. Thank you for that update, or those updates. Next, we'll go to Councilmember Lance, see if you had any committee reports.
I believe I just had the Grover Beach Steering Committee with the South County Chamber of Commerce, and we discussed that in our previous item. So nothing else.
Very good. Next, we'll go to Mayor Pro Tem Bright. See if you had any committees.
I did. I had RTA and several. So RTA, basically, these are all about funding. Of course, CARE funds have come in very handy. They have offset the drop in anticipated transportation review to a total of $16 million to our local transit operators. So that is very welcome news. And SLOCOG, there's a bill at the state that is eliminating the requirement of fare box penalties, which hopefully that is going to pass, because that has been an issue for not only South County Transit but Atascadero as well. So hopefully that's going to be successful. Then we had an RTA meeting, special meeting, that had to be canceled due to a second bid protest. The bid for the bus maintenance facility had to be rebid, and three bids were received. The two low bids were less than the original low bid. Unfortunately, though, there was another pretest regarding responsiveness, so we'll have to see how that comes along. And then my last meeting was IWMA, and it was an executive director's annual evaluation. And then the board gave direction for staff to come back with language regarding single-use plastic utensils and accessories, like condiment packages and that sort of thing. So that's about the extent of my meetings. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you for those updates. And I only had one committee meeting, and that was the Five Cities Fire Authority, of which you did hear the action that we took with regards to the recommended MOA of as we heard this evening earlier, but there has been obviously the Avila Fire of which our Five Cities Fire Authority chief, as well as resources, have been utilized as part of that. And so fortunately, that has been contained, and there were no structures that were damaged. I think there's one structure damaged, but no structures were lost as part of that that event. And I've talked to the chief a little bit. There's still undetermined cause for ignition on that, but the chief did get called out to the Paso Robles Emergency Operations Center this afternoon to support the fire in Paso, which I have not heard what the name of that fire is, but it is still being fought up in Paso Robles, and it looks like one of our units the brush truck will be up in that vicinity tomorrow as a resource being provided to fight that fire. So hope all is well there, and that they get that under control very quickly. So other than that, I had no other committee reports, and so next I'll go to city manager for any updates on League of California Cities committees that he might have had.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Just attended the Governance, Transparency, and Labor Relations Policy Committee meeting a couple of weeks ago, where we did discuss a number of items, including a prospective ballot measure, statewide measure, that would remove Prop 209 from the state constitution, which is in regards to affirmative action in higher education policies and hiring decisions. That would reverse the decision made by voters in 1996. Our committee did advance that forward, but I believe that it is not advancing forward as a board recommendation, as I understand it from Councilmember Shaw. So that's a discussion item that will continue to go forward with our committee, and that was all we had at our committee.
Very good. And I was listened in to the Transportation, Communication, and Public Works Policy Committee. It was mostly an update meeting, as the state is really in a holding pattern to figure out how funds are going to be disrupted or reduced from gas tax and LTIP and so forth, and then trying to figure out if the infrastructure funding is going to be coming and arriving as part of the CARES program from the federal level, and how that's going to get distributed through various organizations. So next we'll come up to council communications. I'll turn it over to Councilmember Shaw first, or actually I'll go first on this one just real briefly. In the fact that I did receive a notice this morning in the mail about a California Coastal Commission hearing coming forward on July 9th. For the ODSVRA Public Works Plan, an update. So I just want to turn it over to City Manager Bronson to see if we need, as a city, to review that and perhaps agendize any discussion on that, or if our prior feedback would be adequate on that. So I'll let Mr. Bronson review that and get back to us on July 6th if we do need to do something there, if Council concurs. And then the only other council communication I have is that I did have an opportunity to attend the Sergeant Smiley fundraiser on Saturday evening down at Finn's. Sergeant Smiley is the Arroyo Grande Police Sergeant that was injured in the Paso situation. Was that just last week? It feels like it was so long ago, but I hear Mr. Smiley is recovering and is working through issues there. But there was a good fundraiser that I believe raised somewhere between $13,000 and $15,000 for him and his family. So with that, I'll turn it to Councilmember Shaw for any council communications.
I just wanted to thank the public for wearing masks now that the governor has put the mask order in place. I haven't been out and about too much in Grover this weekend, but I did go somewhere in Santa Barbara County, and it was outdoors, but people were still very on top of the situation, both customers and the people there. So I do think that, you know, it's helping and people are adapting, and I appreciate everyone. I hope people had similar observations in Grover. I wasn't really out and about, but thank you.
Very good. Thank you for those communications. Next we'll go to Mayor Pro Tem Bright, see what communications she has this evening.
Mayor,
No new communications. What we've had, we've dealt with. So, okay. Thank you.
Very good. Next, I'll go to Councilmember Lance.
Thanks, Marilee. In light of Consent Agenda Item 6 and just that discussion of the upcoming election, I wanted to let everyone know that I have chosen not to run in November. I have been so honored to be on this council. It's been a huge, huge honor, and I'm incredibly grateful for all of the people that had faith in me to represent my community, my colleagues that, you know, voted for me to appoint me onto council. It's been an incredible journey. I continue to serve the remainder of my term through the end of the year, and we have a lot of things that we still have to deal with. We have a lot of challenges post COVID-19, housing, affordability and availability, economic recovery. And I look forward to being a part of those conversations and decision-making. I want to spend more time volunteering on the ground, so to speak. I want to dedicate a little bit more time to volunteering and serving my community in those capacities, as well as focusing some more time on my family and my law practice. I cannot say enough good things about the people that I've worked with in this position. I have such confidence in our city's leadership. I've been amazed by the growth that Grover Beach has had in the last year and a half that I've been a part of the council, and where it's going. And like I said, I continue to be a part of that for the remainder of the year as a council member, but also as a community member. I have been become aware so much of the value of community input that I was not before this experience. And I continue to encourage my neighbors and my friends and family in Grover Beach to be a part of all conversations with regards to the city. And I just wanted to mention that in light of Consent Agenda Item 6. And thank you all. I'm not going anywhere anytime soon, but I thought it was appropriate time to mention that.
Okay. Well, thank you for that input and those comments, and I appreciate the service. And we'll look forward to working with you for another several months before your term is finished. So, with that, though, thank you for those comments. And next, we'll move on to Councilmember Nichols. See what council communications she has this evening.
Yes, I do have one item. It is with a heavy heart that I'm announcing my resignation from the council, effective June 30th. I worked with Jeff and Matt in determining my timing to coordinate with the opening of filing for the November election to fill the remainder of my term, along with new terms for Jeff, Karen, and I have Desi on here, and unfortunately we're losing her, and she, I wish her the best. I am positive the rest of the year the four of you will continue to work the work that this council has been doing and have a very productive campaign season. The past months of online meetings have convinced me that my health issues interfere with doing my job as well as it needs to be done. I will miss you all, staff and council, but I'll be cheerleading for you and contributing to your election campaigns. Love you all. Barbara.
Thank you, Barbara, for those comments, and we are sad to see you leave the council after so many good productive years here. We do appreciate your service, and Councilmember Lance, we do appreciate your service. Like I said, we'll get to see you for a couple more months before you become a full time community member, as Councilmember Nichols will become a full time community member as of July 1st. So. With both of those announcements this evening, I think I'll turn it over to our city manager because I realize we did just have an item this evening that basically opened up two council member positions and a mayor's position for the for the election season, shall we say, nominating period. And so I think Councilmember Nichols' actions are this evening may need us to modify that, or what happens as a result of Councilmember Nichols. And then I'll give council members an opportunity to respond to all the communications this evening as well. So, Mr. Bronson.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. And I'll say a few words, and then I'll turn it over to the city attorney to be able to also weigh in from the process side. So I'll start off and just acknowledge and thank council members Lance and Nichols for their contributions. Councilmember Nichols was on the council to hire me back in 2016, and I just think so highly of her and what she has done for our community, as well as her husband, Councilmember Bill Nichols, who served Grover Beach with distinction for many, many years. And so both Mr. and Mrs. Nichols have served Grover Beach with distinction and elegance over many, many years, and I'm very thankful for them as their city manager for this time. And Councilmember Lance, it's been an honor to serve you over the last year and a half, and I know you're still with us until the end of the calendar year, but thank you for everything you have done and brought to this council as well. To that, I would say that the action that Mayor Lee referenced was a council adopted resolution that called for the election this November for the two council seats that are currently filled by Councilmember Bright and Lance. Those two seats are open for four-year seats beginning in December, so those would be on the ballot currently. With the announcement from Councilmember Nichols and the timing of the end of the fiscal year, my understanding, and I'll turn it over to the city attorney to confirm, is that this would be allowed to be consolidated, incorporated into the November 2020 election this fall as a so-called short seat to fill the remainder of Councilmember Nichols' term, which is 2 years following November. So that would be a two-year seat in contrast to the two four-year seats that currently council members Bright and Lance hold at this time. And all this to say is that I believe we would need to come back with an amended resolution at the July 6th council meeting to officially incorporate all three council seats along with the office of mayor within the jurisdiction of the seats open in the November election. But again, I'll turn it over to Mr. Hale to confirm or affirm that, or provide any further comments that he would like.
I think the city manager Bronson said it most eloquently. It is in light of the timing, the council's ability to incorporate this into the general election this fall. So I don't think you're required to do anything other than that. And also, in concurrence with his statement, you would be advised to bring it back the resolution for the 2020 general municipal election with that modification of the announcement from Councilmember Nichols.
Very good. Thank you, City Attorney. Appreciate that. So I'm assuming that is adequate direction for staff to go ahead and do that and bring that back. But I'll turn it over to, starting with Councilmember Shaw, see if there's any additional comments that she wants to make.
No additional, comments. Just thank you to both of my fellow council members. It's just been a great honor to serve with you both. And Barbara has always been the other half of me in so many ways, because we came into this at the same time. So that's just, we learned a lot together. So that's especially bittersweet. But I hope you will both think of us as you enjoy Monday night TV and life and all the rest of it. So we just appreciate you.
Next, we'll go to Mayor Pro Tem Bright, see if there's any comments that she wants to add.
Well, Miriam is just always so eloquent. I'm mad. So that they're leaving us, but really have enjoyed immensely, well, working with Barbara for so many years and knowing her for so long. And then Desi coming along, and she just, you know, she was so eloquent, and she just did her homework, and I truly enjoyed working with her very much. So I hope that we see her around, and we'll be trying to drag her onto some committee, I'm sure, very soon. So, anywho, miss them greatly, and thank you very much for all you do and did and will do.
Very good. So thank you, everyone, for those comments. So unless Councilmember Lance or Councilmember Nichols, you wanted to add anything else?
I'll just say thank you, Councilmember Nichols. You were, you know, part of the group that had confidence in me to do this job, and I'm appreciative to all of you for having that faith in me, and I wish you all the best with your health and your retirement from the council. I hope you have, you know, more time to spend with your family and work on your health, and hopefully that is good for you, and we'll miss you for the rest of the year. At least I will. And just to respond, I'm sure I will be dragged onto some other committee. I have no walls up yet to that. I think it'll provide me an opportunity to serve Grover Beach in other capacities while I focus on my still very young family. And so thank you for all your comments. I really appreciate that.
Very good. Councilmember Nichols, anything else that you wanted to add?
I believe she's no longer on the line.
Okay, very good. Then we'll turn over to City Manager for any reports and comments that he might have this evening.
Well, it's very difficult to top that set of announcements, but be that as it may, just a few things to add from my perspective. One, to Councilmember Shaw's point earlier, I wanted to also recognize that we do have a statewide face covering order that is in effect for all businesses, all indoor spaces statewide, from the Oregon border to the Mexico border, for all 40 million Californians. And I'll just recognize our council's leadership in creating an ordinance just a few weeks ago that took one step forward in establishing a requirement for businesses. And we were very diligently following that and enforcing that. Our businesses did a great job of complying with that. Now, we as a society in California are stepping it up overall. And I think it's a prudent step forward for public health reasons. And going around the community over the weekend, I saw a great deal of compliance from employees and businesses and customers, so that is very important. Just to note that case numbers are continuing to go up statewide across this county and in our city. We now have 14 cases that are confirmed in Grover Beach. We had two only a few weeks ago. So our numbers are increasing. It's in part due to more testing in our county, but it's also due to, I think, some of the relaxation that we've seen in the reopening work that has gone on. People are wanting to get back to a sense of normalcy, and that's understandable. But to quote our fire chief, who tells us all the time, we cannot be complacent. We cannot be complacent in our practices. We cannot be complacent in our standards. We cannot be complacent in how we carry ourselves. We have to follow the public health guidelines that are so important for us as a society. So I do believe that, and our organization will continue to follow the compliance and enforcement as we see fit, to in compliance with state and local orders. And your city government will implement that to the best of our ability, and working with our community that has shown such good compliance overall. We're not out of this yet, and we need to continue our work and really double down on that work as we reopen safely as a community. And then lastly, I'll just acknowledge that, actually two more things. One is that we do have the 4th of July coming up, and I wanted to mention to the council that we are stepping up our enforcement of illegal fireworks. I want to credit our police chief for establishing additional units on patrol next weekend and the weekend after to go around and make sure that we are abiding as a community by the fireworks ordinances. And our crews, our police officers, will go around and be checking on problem areas. It's a challenge for us to enforce it, given the fact that we have to watch it in action, but we'll have more units on the ground next weekend and the weekend after to help in making sure we are following and fulfilling our ordinance. And again, the discharge period for safe and sane fireworks is now only on July 4th. That's the only date that's available for our community along with Rio Grande. And lastly, I'll mention that last week we did send out the first Grover Gazette electronic newsletter that went out to over 2,000 email addresses across the community, also posted on our website, social media platforms as a way to help convey what we're doing, what we're about, what services we're providing, and to better connect with our community. This is a monthly newsletter that will go out around the middle of the month. We've been very pleased by the feedback, and we think it'll be a great tool for us to continue in telling our story of how we're serving our community. And with that, I will yield the floor.
Very good. I appreciate that. Just one reminder, we do have a joint City Council Planning Commission meeting coming up, do we not?
Yes, Mr. Mayor, on Monday, July 27th.
Very good. So, great. So we'll look forward to seeing everybody at that meeting, and then I'll turn it over to our city attorney for any reports and comments he might have this evening.
And then this evening, Mr. Mayor.
You did that so quick, I don't know if I was muted in time. But with that, we don't have any closed session this evening. So so I know Barbara is no longer with the meeting, but we will say thank you to Barbara, and we'll adjourn the last City Council meeting that she'll attend at this time. And thank you, everyone. Have a good evening, and we'll see you on the 27th virtually.
Thank you.